I don't know what I did, but I got a notification one day that said that I was now considered a group expert. I'm like, okay, then I guess I am. Perfect.
That's something that you can get. The admin can give out. Like,
yeah, it's probably what it was.
On my group, I'm the only one. I'm the only group expert.
Okay.
You're a group asshole.
Well, fuck you.
Jesus. Fucking group expert. If you're a group expert, what the hell am I?
A group expert on my group.
You don't know shit about nothing. What do you know? What do you know about this hobby besides fucking putting paint on a piece of plastic? You don't even know what the fuck you're doing half the time. Instructions told you to put something on something on backwards, you would do it because you don't know how to do anything but follow fucking instructions.
That's totally true, man.
So you're an expert. You know what? That's the good analogy I made before. You're the smartest of all the dumb kids. You're the best out of all the shitty builders.
That's okay. There's always still got to be a best and a worst in a team. So
keep up the good work. I expect nothing less from you. Guys, welcome to episode 13 of the Model Insanity Podcast. I am your host, Rob Riv. I'm with my co-host, Mr. Justin Ryan.
Hello, everybody.
Mr. Steve Santucci.
Good day.
Mr. Frank Donati.
Good afternoon, modeling boppers.
And Mr. Rob Adams.
Yo, yo.
All right, so today we have a special episode. We have a good friend with us sitting in the co-host chair. He's been a big member of our group since we started. But he's also been a member of our past group. I met him at the Amps Nationals back in 2022. He's our good friend, Dr. Dave Morris. So, Dave, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having us on.
So we got Dave on because there's a few things we want to talk about. One being a recent article that Dave wrote for Amps Boresight regarding his experience in the hobby as well as Amps. So we're going to get to that very shortly. That's our topic number one. But first, we want to clean up a few things before we start. I think that the Lincoln Wright episode was a really great episode. It was a lot of fun. I think that those who heard it, hopefully you did. If you didn't, go check out episode 12 of Lincoln Wright. I think the real Lincoln was able to break out of his shell and hang out and tell funny stories and talk about the hobby in a fun way. And that's what this is all about, promoting the group and the hobby in a fun way. And I think that Lincoln realized that right at the beginning of the interview. And within a few minutes, he broke out of his shell and he was uncontrollable, right, Justin? At some points, we had
to. He opened right up to us.
There's a lot of stuff we had to edit out of that podcast that didn't make it into the final cut because we might be getting knocks on the door from authorities trying to find out what's going on.
He opened up like a sumo butthole after wasabi night.
Exactly. We're in the midst of season number two. This will be our third episode of season number two, but it is episode 13, though. We're keeping the episode numbers, but it is season two, just to break down, you know, the years or whatever. But we do get messages and correspondence from people. And a lot of times, people will message me, email, and just say how much they love the show, how much they laughed at certain things, or how informative it is, or how they love how I break Santucci's chops and whatnot. Well, he's flipped me off now, but it's true. But sometimes I get some messages from people that are really out from left field. So everybody knows my distaste for a certain paint company. And Justin, I mentioned on episode 11 about what his resolutions were for the year. He wanted to try new paint systems and try new paints, which I thought was great. He mentioned a certain paint company, which I will say now, and that's the only thing I'm going to say because I don't want any more hate mail from people, but Mission Models Paints. And everybody knows that I've, you know, always joke around or like, you know, have a distaste for Mission Model Paints. So this particular person, I guess the episode was uploaded for like an hour, maybe 2 hours at the time. So I get this message from this guy, and he knows who it is, and I'm not going to say his name on here, but he sends me this message. Quote, "Man, stop shitting on Mission Models Paints if you're an incompetent modeler. You should find a new hobby. Get a life. You suck balls, and someone should punch you in the face and then give me the middle finger. I love it. I mean, I thought that was, I never laughed. I needed a laugh. I was dying. And I was actually in the fucking build room when I got this message. And I was like, what are you guys, what are you laughing at? I'm like, you got to hear this message I just got. So listen, I appreciate the message and I appreciate the insight. Now it's totally, you know, like I said, you know, this is a critique. We talked about critiquing, about, you know, how to critique people in a good way. I don't know if this is the most professional way to critique somebody, telling them that you want to punch them in the face. But I also think that people should respect people's opinions. Just because I don't like the paint doesn't mean that you're not going to like the paint. I'm not telling you not to use it. God bless you. You know, if you like to wear, you know, a G-string underwear underneath your pants, God bless you, man. But I certainly don't like things running up my ass when I'm fucking wearing jeans.
Rectal right? floss.
Exactly. Now, if you want to use these paints, go ahead. And I appreciate that you're listening. Listen, I'd rather you listen and message me. That's interaction. I want to have interaction with the people who listen to the podcast. But I also think that, you know, telling me that I'm an incompetent model, which I don't think I am. I mean, I might be in people's eyes, but I don't think I am.
And painter,
I think
I maybe.
What's that?
Painter, maybe. But model, listen, far from it.
That I understand. But, I mean, you could say that I'm an incompetent painter. But I think when I do paint, I think I'm not bad, but I also appreciate people's opinions, and I appreciate this guy's opinion, but he got a little crazy threatening me to punch me in the face. So that was a fun little message. So this wasn't a rant. This was just something to let people know. Again, if you have anything that you want to tell us to do, or you like something, of course, send us a message or an email. Rob Brews Modeling Insanity. We are going to be opening up a new email page. I think we're going to do a more streamlined one, so all the guys have access to it, not just myself, because I'm really bad at checking emails, and sometimes I'll forget for weeks on end, and I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't check the email. And I got people asking me to, you know, say things on the show or, you know, mention shows coming, and I feel bad that I've been really, like, bad with that. Things have been going on. It's been crazy. All right, so that's it. So, again, if you want to send me a message, I have no problems with that. I need a good laugh once in a while, especially when you're threatening me with violence. Because some sort of paint. But all right, so we're going to move into our first topic with Dr. Dave, and we are going to discuss his recent article on Boardside. But again, we want to just get a background. So Frankie Donati is going to be taking the lead on the interview for Dr. Dave, but Dr. Dave is also going to be participating on the whole show. We're going with our segmented shows that we normally do. So this is not an interview format. This is just a quick discussion with Dave, as well as moving into our next topic, and then discussing new kits and so on and so forth, and also talking about social media shout outs. So, Frankie, it's all you.
Thanks, Rob, and thanks for not thinking any less of me because I wear G-strings. I really do appreciate that, my friend. Dr. Dave and I met actually last year at Heritage Con. It was brief, but it was magical. I will never forget that time we met, Dave. That was with Brad. So you recently had an article published in Boardside, which is the Amps magazine, and it caught our eye when we saw it because of your subject, which was going from beginner to advanced in a year. So before we dive into sort of the article and how it sparked a conversation amongst us and in our group, what's your background with the hobby, Dave?
So like a lot of people, I did modeling as a kid. I had another bout of it probably about 15, 20 years ago and kind of drifted away. Started to get interested in it again and wanted to do it, I guess, a little more seriously, a little differently. So first I went to, let's see, it was the year before Roscoe Turner's. I went without a kit. I just wanted to see what was out there. And I wanted to learn what made a good kit good. I mean, we all know how to look at a kit or look at somebody's work and say, that looks great. But figuring out what made it great and how to get there was something I wanted to learn more about. So I volunteered to judge, even though I didn't bring anything there. Learned a lot of good stuff. And a lot of it was learning how to see what was going on, how to see things in the model instead of just looking at the big picture. So I was interested enough in that and enjoyed it enough that a few months later, I went to South Bend, the Super Regional. I didn't bring any kits with me. I went by myself and was blown away, just utterly blown away by the stuff that I was seeing on the table. Again, I volunteered to judge and got trained as a judge. I was really impressed both with the culture of the organization, because people were really outgoing. There was something about it that made people much more willing to talk, to share, say what was going on how they got where they did. Also, I love the fact that with that system, there were separate categories of build quality, paint quality that could help me identify the sub steps in making something better. Just totally fell in love with it. So tried to hook up with a local group there isn't anything near where I live because I'm in a pretty small town. The nearest was an IPMS group about 30 miles away. And I went once and they were literally the same guys, the same officers for 25 years. Didn't really get a good connection. But I noticed there was somebody else on the Facebook group who was new and reached out to him through Facebook. And that turned out to be Brad, who has become a really good friend and has been my mentor and growing in the hobby, too. Learned just a ton from him. But the best thing about my friendship with Brad is that I'm a basement-dwelling introvert. You ever see those nature shows, the trapdoor spider? There's these spiders that do not hunt. They dig a hole. They make a lid to their hole, cover it with dirt so you can't really see that it's there, and it hides in the hole and every so often pops the door open, grabs an ant, sucks back down into the hole. I was a trapdoor spider. So Brad became my adopted extrovert. I never would have gone to Ants Nats. He had not gone to a gnat, but because both of us were interested, what the heck, we took the long drive. It was about 8 hours. And while I was there, that's when I first met Riv and met a bunch of other guys because Brad's involved with a bunch of other groups. So got to know people, had such a great time. And again, learned and grew and bought a bunch of stuff. That was a big part of my path. I think I brought a kit to that meet. But that was the first kit that I had built with modern techniques for a decade or more. That's where I started in basic, that with a project that I look at now and say, yeah, that one's going into a box. But at the time, it was what I could do. So that's how I got here.
That's great. So we kind of went in with two streams with your answer, and you cover both of those. One is that capability within the hobby. You know, you've chosen something as a pastime, I think, like a lot of us, right? It's that time away from the day-to-day life, from the stresses, something that you enjoy. It gives you a creative outlet and, like we all have, a social outlet. The days of the basement-dwelling solo modeler, I mean, probably the greatest thing that happened with the internet for us is we actually started making friends in the hobby as opposed to, you know, like a correspondence through a club that's halfway across the country. When you started judging, when you were getting those lessons, what were some of your takeaways when you started to appreciate what it takes to be a judge at one of these competitions, when you're actually judging models? Did you have any takeaways with regards to what you were looking at that you weren't aware of at first, like when you were first back into the hobby, that helped you to improve your own skill set?
Yeah, absolutely. Judging is hard work, but the cool things that I liked about it, again, I'm sitting around a table with three guys who pretty much know a lot more than I do, especially when I first started out. And I had the opportunity to look at people's work, hear what the other guys were saying, and ask what they were seeing if I didn't see it. So why is this better than that? Why is this getting knocked off? Oh, that's what you mean by seeing, you know, I didn't even see that glue mark. And little by little was able to pick up stuff, which then turned into changes in the way I did my model. The second part to that question, the judging skills themselves, boy, I just cannot recommend highly enough. Anybody can go to the AMPS website, and if you follow the path down through the menu to the judging training, those training courses are magnificent. Even if you never want to judge, they show exactly what people look at and what makes up a good model. I can't recommend highly enough the slideshows that you can find on the amps-armor.org website. I went through those before I did my second judging session, and it made an enormous difference, not just in how well I judged, but even more in how I built the models. Because now I'm seeing a seam that I didn't see before. I didn't know what to look for. Now I'm seeing a glue mark or a paint splooge or a problem with a finish that I would not have noticed before. I can't recommend that enough. It made me such a better modeler just going through those.
Well, you become self-critical, right? You start looking and critiquing your own work. And that's an aspect of the hobby. We talked about it in two episodes ago when we talked about social media and being able to take a critique or not. I think maybe you'd agree at a club show or a club meeting, when you're person to person, that critique is a great interaction and a great ability to get some honest opinions on your work and what you're bringing versus the open forum that is the worldwide weird, where anybody, including, you know, Rob's favorite fan, can make critiques like we heard earlier on that work, right? And do you feel that the impact to you is more constructive when it's that one-on-one? I'm going to a show, I'm going to a contest, display or otherwise, to get that feedback, good or bad, from people who know what they're looking at versus putting it out there for the world to sort of opinion on.
Yeah, you know, I consider Facebook feedback not all that useful. I mean, the places where people are nice, you get a lot of attaboys, which is good. The places where people are more critical, it many times becomes a lot more personal than it needs to be. Rather than thinking about critique or not critique, I think about it a lot more as learning to see. getting an eye. It's like if art museums were your thing. You go to an art museum and at first you're saying, this looks good, this doesn't look good, I like this, I don't like this. But as you learn more about how art works, you begin to see the brushwork and see the color choices in ways that you never would have noticed before. So the critique, I guess, was a way of developing my own eye. It's not that I'm trying to compete. I'm not trying to beat anybody else. I want to get to the point that my model on the table looks as good as the ones that everybody else is putting on the table, not because I want to beat them or not because I need to validate myself, just because I want it to look good. But to learn how to get it there, you don't just like take, oh yeah, model looks good spray and give it once over. After primer, of course.
They actually do make that. Vallejo carries that.
Yes. And it'll peel as soon as you look at it.
Absolutely. That's great. And I appreciate where you're coming from with that. You're right. I mean, everyone's heard our discussion and knows our opinion, and thanks for that. When we look at your article and what you talked about, right, the personal connections, when we see that circle, right, you're part of our podcast Discord group. You attend quite frequently. You hang out with us. I've met you at a show. Rob's met you at a show. Do you think that's an important part of the hobby, that we don't work in isolation anymore, but that we have this circle, like a support circle, that we can get feedback and critique and a better eye and that interaction? Because my opinion, and this is my opinion only and does not reflect the opinion of the Modern Sanity Podcast trademark, but you know, is that it's healthier now that I have a circle. I have Adams every week. Fuck that. That looks like shit, Frankie. Stuff like that, right? Do you agree that, or disagree that it makes it a healthier hobby for us because now we've got a social aspect to something that was rather insular?
Absolutely. When I'd go to contests in years past, I'd go and for me, getting over that first, hi, how are you? Nod your head, make a connection that gets beyond that, it just wasn't going to happen. So I'd wander around and smile at people. But because, not in a creepy way, I never got arrested. Just want to make that clear.
Good. Good.
That's only because they didn't know you were wearing a G-string.
Thanks, Justin. Knowing that it goes under the jeans made a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. To the acceptability. Yes.
Right. What I found that it meets is, and I think this even happened with us, Frank, we had gotten to know each other just very in that superficial way, passing in the hall in the chat group. And then when I got to a meet where I'm only going to have contact with people for a few hours, instead of having to start from scratch, it's like, oh yeah, Frank, how you doing? Well, yeah, let's go to dinner. And we have this conversation. We talk about the models we're able to work together and just shoot the breeze in a way that couldn't happen otherwise. And in those groups, and this happened just this week in the chat group, I had a problem. First time I'd tried using an all metal barrel and it went fine, except that I kept getting flaking off the barrel. So this time I'm using a metal barrel again. And then I threw it out there. Hey guys, what primer do you use? How do you prep the barrel just so the paint doesn't peel? You can get an answer like that instead of having to root around on forums and get conflicting information and arguments and disagreements. You get a quick answer. And then anytime you're asking somebody for help and they give you help back, that's just that much more of a built up relationship. Making those connections, starting out with the chatting back and forth on a Facebook page and then turning into conversations. When real life happens, when people are having hard things in their lives, there's a network of support.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about the hobby and what, you know, the good side of what the internet gave us and this interconnectivity that we can now have. But now I'm looking at you and very dapper and handsome and the G-strings tucked away, but you got an amp shirt on. So you went to an amps. So you're doing armor. Have you branched out? What are you building now, Dave? Do these shows that you go to and the people you meet, are you starting to, you know, maybe not stick to the crack, maybe a little heroin, maybe a little codeine, maybe a little bit of, you know, a little bit of Ripple? Are you expanding that?
Yeah, armor was not my gateway drug. I was a lifelong aircraft guy. And I think I put together two or three tanks just to do it. And I think illustrated in that article that ended up in Amps, I pulled a tank that I had built probably 15 years ago in Tamiya Dunkelgelb plastic. Well, that's the real color. I didn't even bother to paint it. The shovel, literally tester silver paint for the whole thing. We're not talking art quality here. So started in aircraft. I got into armor to a large degree because of getting pulled into that amps culture. And so I've done a ton of armor and learned a ton about making it look dirty, but I do a lot of other stuff. So right now on my table, I've got a 700 Japanese cruiser on waterline, and I actually got it at the Hamilton meet, doing some photo etch in teeny tiny scale. I got another project in my mind that we'll talk about later on. Tanks, armor, aircraft. I've got a B-10B with that yellow wing and bright, bright blue. I've got stacked up and ready to go. started to do some figures. But that, I think, leads, I guess, to another thing that I struggle with as a modeler. I get avoidant about stuff that's new, hard, and challenging. And I think that is a thing that the group has helped me with, because otherwise I'd be saying, yeah, I'll get to that. And so there's a lot that I hold back. I mean, I did a figure painting class, and I was so geeked after that class. I got the thing like 90% done during the class. I could not believe that this is something that I can't believe I painted that. I'm just going to finish this project here, and then I'm going to get back to that. It has now been 4 months, and I have done no more figure painting. I messed up the weathering on a tank project, and I've got this mental block about dust and dirt. I'm just nervous about using my pigments. The group is great for that. And there are other guys out there who are, I love Martin Drayton and his fearlessness. Like, yeah, just do it. I know that's what I need to do. That's been an important milestone, I guess, hurdle for me to jump over.
Yeah, you just suffer from what I call MAD, M-A-D-D, which is modeling attention deficit disorder.
Yeah.
We all get it, right? You'll pull out a ship. Oh, I'm going to go back to this. We all, like, that's where the Shelf of Doom comes from, right? That's our... Mm-hmm. That's why Adams on the MMU went with this whole build your shelf of doom. And we saw the inertia that group build had, because I don't think we had a whole lot show up. So
no one did it.
Yeah. We're all afraid of our shelf.
There's a reason why that shit's on the shelf.
Exactly.
That was an experiment gone a little sideways, but whatever. The thing was that so many people were asking, let's do a Shelf of Doom build. Okay, finally, because I was resistant to it for a long time, just because how do you determine what partly done is versus almost done versus, you know what I mean? Like,
and they still didn't get done.
If all you got to do is spray a flat coat and call it finished, you know, is that fair?
That don't count.
Was there prizes for this group build?
There was.
Yeah.
But
what prizes?
DJ donated a kit. Vaughn donated, as he always does.
Us, yeah.
Aaron Larkin also donated a prize pack.
I mean, again,
I told them all, we're doing it again. I'm not giving out prizes for this group build.
I think that would have been a good group build. Sorry for segueing from Dave's interview, but
yeah.
That would be just a good group build, but not for prizes, just to do it.
Well, the prize should be partly finished kits.
Right. That's what the prizes should be. They should be Rob Riv's unpainted models.
Wow, that's hernia inducing.
God damn.
Oof. We can even pick up that photo.
Just do an exchange. I'll send you my half-built model and you finish it. And you know what I mean?
I think what holds me back, it isn't so much that I'm distractible. It's that I've got this perfectionist streak that's tied to, you know, I'm not good enough or I'm not going to do a good enough job. So what I've been doing is just going ahead and jumping from one project to another, not feeling like I have to finish a project before I move on to the next one. And I've really enjoyed that.
Do you find you have one of our other syndromes is that I don't know when to stop? When's the kit done? A lot of us, I don't think some of our kits are ever done, but are you able to get to that point where you go, okay, I'm happy now, it's finished, I'm going to throw it off somewhere?
Yeah, I'm okay at saying this one's done, I'm moving on. And anything that I'm learning that I see on this project, I'm going to apply to the next one because I'm just not going to deal with it. I picked up a started anime tank that I thought was the coolest, funniest thing. I got it almost done and I was just ready to start the weathering, and I realized that the part that the guy had done before, literally with Bondo filler, there were some deep scratches. And for the longest time I was, you know, I don't care, I'm just going to do it. And I looked at it long enough, I am liking this enough, I went back and I filled in those scratches and I'm going to repaint that section. I think perfection is the enemy of the good. And I know that it keeps me from doing things because deep down I'm intimidated. I'm aware of it. I just haven't figured out how to beat it.
I hear you. And, you know, your intimidation factor wasn't there because you wrote the article, right? You felt there was a need for that and you wrote it. And I appreciate you writing it because I think it was a great story about that journey, like from beginner to advanced in such a short time. But you took those steps to make yourself better at what you want to do, right? And the last part of your article was keep on building. That was your advice, which is probably the best thing, right? If you're not done or gets to you or gets too hard or too challenging, or you make the mistake of looking at other people's builds going, oh, sweet jeepers, I can't do that. Right. Keep at it, right? Keep going at it. Do your best and you will get better. You will improve and you will keep enjoying the hobby, won't you?
Yep. I got some great advice just chatting with somebody who's on another podcast, telling him that, you know, I'm struggling with this and I look at a project and I'm not happy with that, how it looks. And he said, man, change the way you think about it. You are the project. The model is not the project. It's you as a modeler. So every time you do something, whether that kit came out the way you wanted or whether it didn't and you learned from it and the next kit you build will, that's a project success. And that's really been a burden off my shoulders too.
You just made me flash back to Caddyshack. Be the ball, Danny. Be the ball.
The world needs ditch diggers too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great, Dave. So thanks for sharing your journey with us over these last 2 years as you've come back to the hobby and sharing your insights. I appreciate it. I think the readers of Boarside appreciate it. And we look forward to your future builds and what you're going to bring to the group and to the internet and to shows. I get to see you in March before the rest of these guys do.
Looking forward to it. I really do believe, though, that with the tools that are out there between what's on the internet and small groups, taking photos of your own work, the slideshows that we talked about, anybody can make this kind of progress. You can learn to do what it is that you're trying to do. Not to win a medal, but to make something that you're happy with. It doesn't have to take years. You don't have to get stalled.
Listen, Dave, when we met back in Newport News in 2022 for the Ants Nationals, you were like a deer in headlights.
Yep.
I remember meeting you and I didn't even really know Brad at the time. We had talked on Messenger. Kind of regret that meeting Brad now, looking back at it, but I can't go back and change that. No, I'm only kidding. I love Brad occasionally. But when we met...
Is there more we need to talk about? You said you love Brad occasionally?
Nah, I love Brad once in a while. But he's a good guy. I mean, but without Brad, I wouldn't have met you. So I'm thankful to have that friendship with Brad that I can meet you. But when I first met you, in all seriousness, all joking around, you were a deer in headlights. You were nervous. Now, meeting you, becoming friends, talking, I don't know, at least weekly, bi-weekly, at least 3 times a week sometimes, maybe more. Your level of ability in the hobby has changed exponentially.
Oh, thanks.
Well, the work that you were producing then, not saying that it wasn't good, but you were learning. And This is something that we talked about in episode 11 about being inspired and learning. And, everybody has to start somewhere. Some people, begin modeling much earlier in life. Some people begin later. Some people have abilities that other people don't have and they're quick learners or they don't need tutorials to learn. They just do it. And your abilities have tripled, maybe quadrupled since we first met. Like you said, your article on Boarside was going from beginner to advanced in a year, right? That's really what it was about?
Yeah. And it could not have happened without the mentorship of Brad and you guys. Just being able to bounce things off people and learn from them. And if you use the internet wisely, so find that 30 seconds in a 2-hour video where somebody shows exactly how to do something. You can grow really fast.
I'm a big believer in you can watch someone do things. You can read a magazine. You can watch a YouTube video. But when you do it for yourself while that person's doing it, you learn so much faster. You see how it is and you're able to make adjustments on the fly. Especially when it comes to painting. I think building is one thing. You can learn to be a better builder, but building is, in a lot of people's minds, is secondary to painting for a lot of people. They want to build. They want to get the model done fast. They want to get to the airbrush. They want to paint. They want to weather. Get to the fun stuff. Bring the model to life. And I can appreciate that. But I think that painting and weathering and techniques that are used for that aspect of the hobby, whether it's with armor, aircraft, cars, ships, Gundams, that you can progressively learn new techniques by doing it along a tutorial, going to a Jim Rice painting class like you took. I know you didn't mention Jim by name, but you did attend a Jim Rice painting class. Now, it's not free. I mean, it does cost money to go to it, but you're also getting a lot of supplies, paints he provides and stuff. But just to elaborate on that, you talked about the painting class. So you did attend, and this is something that we were going to talk about prior. We were going to have you on earlier to talk about this, but this is a good opportunity to talk about it. It's about this painting class that you took with Jim Rice. If anybody doesn't know who Jim Rice is, he's an amazing painter, right, Justin?
Absolutely.
MFCA master, right? I mean, he's a master painter. We've spoken about him on the show before. He is the owner of Sabo Miniatures.
Correct.
So how was taking that class? As for me, I'm not a figure painter at all. I would need a beginner class for that. So how was that tutorial with Jim Rice?
That was amazing. And honestly, I came in as a beginner. I'd even emailed back and forth with him some saying, is this really, am I going to the right place? His teaching technique is very good. And in the same class with me, and I think another person may have been pretty new, guys basically who do no painting of figures. And there were also a couple people who were already master painters who are trying to learn how to get faster or how to do better at particular effects. And he managed to make that class work for everybody. So I'm really thankful that I took it, and I'm kind of beating myself, as I want to do, for not using it more, but we'll get there. We'll get back to it.
Now, do you think now that since you took that class that you feel like you can recreate some of those on your own now if you had to?
Yes, I do. So the concepts, the ideas, the techniques, I feel like I've got those. I do have notes that I took from the class, and I've got the step-by-step instruction booklet showing how each step happens and what you do with each. Now, when I look at videos on the internet, I've got a framework to put it in. So I have no doubt that when I buckle down and get it done, that I'll be doing stuff that I'm happy with, and I'll get better and better at it.
Now, is he available? Like, now that you took his class, he knows you. I mean, I don't know Jim, but you took that class. Now, is he available if you message him and be like, hey, Jim, you know, what was that thing about this? Would he message you back, or is he available for that, or does he make himself available?
He said so. Yeah, I just haven't done it.
No, that's awesome. Like, Dave, again, you're expanding your modeling skills. I mean, it's getting better. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how you do. I mean, listen, you're going to Canada for Heritage College. I mean, I don't know how hard the competition is going to be up in Canada. It is Canada. But when you come to the Amps Nats in America, you're going to be going against some stiff competition in advanced. Well, actually, you know what? These two Canucks are coming down to America, too. You're not competing?
Well, no, I'm going to put stuff in. I'm not going against anybody. I'm looking to have the best kit I can, whether there are other people there or not.
He's looking to come hang out with me. Basically, it's reunited. It's going to be a great time. So
Santucci's not going to be there, so I don't know how much fun you could possibly have at Heritage Con.
But he's going to have a good time. Biggest show up here.
Yeah, no, I mean, who else? Who wouldn't want to hang out with Donati? I mean, it's better than modeling.
That's true.
Especially if he wears that G-string.
Right. He'll be modeling that for sure.
Oh, hell yeah.
Got to be on the head.
Well, it's a lot of real estate available for that.
Amps Nationals 2024. God willing, it's what, 6 weeks away? I hope I'm still functional in some way by the time it's time to go there. But I'm looking forward to Amps Nationals, Dave. We're going to have a good time. I look forward to seeing your work. And it's always fun how all of us hanging out. And I'm looking forward to it. But is there anything else? Rob, Justin, Tooch, did you ask anything? Or?
No, because you asked it, so it's all good. You mentioned the whole figure show. Knowing who Jim Rice is and his association with his company and taking that class, you know, it was fantastic. And you coming back and telling us how great it was just makes it maybe for those who are struggling or want to learn more. Jim Rice obviously has a touch of ability to teach, because that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely a great teacher. So if you can pull the resources and the time together, I would recommend it to anybody.
So the one downfall is you didn't get to see much of that show, though, right?
No, this happened before the show.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, usually they do the classes like 2 days before the show.
I think I missed part of the first day of the show.
Okay.
So I wasn't able to do everything the whole time, but it was not in place of the show.
Okay. I don't know why I thought that for some reason.
You may do it differently in different places.
Yeah, maybe. I just thought I remembered you talking about that you missed out on a bunch of stuff because...
I know I was able to go for a day and a half, and maybe it was a 2.5-day show.
Either way, that was my question too, was about the Jim Rice, so...
So it cut into it, but it was worth it.
Just to add to that Jim Rice thing is you made a good point because, I mean... There's thousands of videos out there, right? Like you, Dave, I'm working on a 1-700 ship, or as Adams likes to call it, like just a session of sadomasochism. And I was just looking, you know, different ways to do the waves because I'm putting mine on a water base. And there's tons of videos, and half of them are not really that good because the people that do them are just not really all that good at articulating what they do, right? And I think that's important. And I think it's great that you had that opportunity to sit with someone that can do that, that has that skill set to show.
Well, when you can keep all skill levels engaged at the same time and everybody's still learning, that's a skill.
Literally, people who are already gold medal figure painters at MMSI and people who are just starting, and everybody had a good experience.
No, I think if you find a good teacher, you follow them. I know Rob and I used to hang out years ago, and Joe Hudson used to drop in on our chats. And half the time he showed up, he would be working on something, and it turned into a little primer on how to do figure painting. And so, you know, we didn't even know Joe was working on his book until he told us, but we got a little sneak peek at what he was going to share with other folks. And he was another example of someone that was really good at showing us and talking to us and teaching us how to make ourselves better modelers, which is fantastic.
One of the most humble guys I've ever met, too.
He's fantastic.
He's actually being featured in the new Fine Scale Modeler special release, How to Paint Award-Winning Figures. I think there's a dozen contributors, and he's one of them on there.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he is.
So, Dave, what do you have working on your bench right now?
So, I've got four things in various stages. I've got a 1-700 Yabari. Did a lot of photo etch work, probably the first time I've done that much. So, I'm looking forward to getting it in primer and moving forward. I've got the Skoda Turtle that is ready for dust and dirt weathering. I've got a 72nd Toldy that is likewise ready for dust and dirt. And then I've got a Sherman that is going to be a diorama project. I've got it. Actually, what's holding me up is it's going to have a figure in it. and I was stalled on the figure. So did some research on trying to make good wood grain paint effects, and I'm going to do that. And probably once I catch up on those three others, I'll probably get going on my Sherman. I've got a killed, captured Sherman that I've had in my head for probably 2 years. So,
all right. So I don't know. How about you, Frankie D? What you working on?
I am just about done a 700 scale Yoshima Hiryu aircraft carrier.
Okay.
It was sitting on the bench. And I didn't know what to do. Riv was busting my balls because I wanted to do something that was not permitted. Air quotes for our listeners.
Right. I'm glad you got this out. Speak it out.
So now that he said that, of course, I've got three Stugs in a row to do, plus a couple of KVs.
Whoa, what? It's bullshit.
Actually, the Hiryu is almost done, but I posted yesterday. I picked up a 1700 Big E, the Academy kit, which is the modeler's one, so it comes with masks and photo etch.
Okay.
So I'm in an aircraft state of mind right now, I think, aircraft carrier mind, so...
Nice.
Well, yeah.
Nice. Adams, what are you working on?
My Nats project. It's the Meng British Heavy Tank Mark V male, full interior. It's almost all built now. The interior is completed. Well, actually, no, it's not. The sponsons got to paint the inside of those fucking things, too.
All the ammo.
Yeah, lots of ammo. And I've done it so that the kit is basically I can remove the whole side in layers so I can pull the sponson off and you can see what that would look like. And then you can pull the armor plate off the front and then you can see all the drivetrain and all the wheels and shit. And okay. Then I can pull that whole thing off and then you got a complete view of the inside of the tank.
Okay.
That's always what I was kind of planning on doing with it. I'm happy that it actually worked out. I was reading the instructions over and over, like, is this going to work? A lot of it does rely on friction, so a little extra, you know, matte coat here and there lets everything hold together nice and tight. And
everything in life resolves around friction.
Right.
All right. Is that it, Rob? I've been watching what you're doing, and it is awesome. It's spectacular work. You're focused on that one right now?
Yeah, and then the Musaru Cup is...
The Musaru Cup.
He's calling my name right now, too. Yeah. So
it's almost the last minute. You better hustle up.
I see him build. There's no such thing as last minute with that man.
All right, Tooch, how about you? What you got going on the bench?
So more or less, I'm finishing up projects that have sat between 1 and 3 years.
Okay.
And right now on the bench are 3 172 Fly Hawk FT-17s in American colors with American figures. So I'm working on those to get those done. I did finish a Rumfell that I built 2-3 years ago, and I finally finished the vignette for that. I have a pom-pom anti-aircraft German War I gun that's done. I have two figures on the way for that. I finally finished, after a year, the Rolls-Royce World War I armored car conversion to 1914. Shout out to TJ Haller for noticing that I needed to change one thing to make it more correct, so... Kudos to him for pointing that out in a photo I posted. And I have two figures done for that, and I'm waiting for two more that should be arriving this week from Copper State. Nice. So I can finish that for Nats.
All right. Awesome. Rob Riv, what's hot and pressing on your bench?
Well, I mean, if anybody's seen, I don't know when this is going to drop, but I have been painting my SU-76R. I at least started to paint it. I recently posted the finished build. Reworked build of that SU-76I, which was like a passion project that I was doing at the time. It was a model that Santucci will remember. It sat in Shelf Queen Purgatory for quite a while. I had everything built. The main components of it was built, but not really put together because I kind of didn't know how I wanted to present it. So until I saw Brian Kruger's, he did an SU-76I a few years back, and the way he did it was just so inspiring. And we talked about inspiring models, and I did talk about this on that one podcast, episode 11, that it inspired me to finish that SU-76I, which I did. And it sat built and unpainted for quite a while. I decided that I wanted to paint that to bring to AMPS Nationals, but I also wasn't happy when I looked at it. I wanted to improve it even more, which is weird to say, because it was already built pretty well. And I kind of redid the weld beads on it to make it more like a Russian weld on the substructure. I changed a few things around. I added some, changed the tracks. I changed some of the wheels. I added stowage. And I just started painting that. So we're in the primer stage of the model. And I started priming it. I primed it. And I noticed something that I didn't like. So me, being the person that I am, stripped the primer off.
Oh, my God.
Back to plastic and metal. And you would probably never know that there was ever paint on it. That's how clean it is. And I fixed what I wanted to fix. And I'm ready to just hit it with primer again. And hopefully I won't have an OCD experience this third time or a second time. And get the primer on and some shadowing. And then get the base coat down. It will be an SU-76i represented in a very distressed whitewash on top. I don't know how much whitewash is going to be on it, but it will be beat up and distressed to represent how beat up the model is. So that is currently on the bench. I'm also working on a KV-1 that I'm going to be doing with Jackson Stanton as a sort of like a co-writer for Military Model Craft. Nice. I'm building it, and he's going to paint it. So
thank God.
Right. I go to the experts. John Bonanni's painting the R35 that I had built a few months back that's all blinged out. So John's going to be painting that for an article for Military Model Craft. I built it. I'm doing the build article. He's doing the painting article. And the same thing I'm going to be doing with Jackson. So I would give one to Santucci to paint, but he's a terrible modeler. So I can't even waste it on that. And Tooch, I got to ask you something.
You want that FT-17.
What happened?
I want your 1/16 scale FT-17.
You are going to get that. I took a little break there for a couple of weeks during the holiday season, but I'm back in full gear having a good time. Jeez. And the build rooms have been fucking hopping right now. We had like 20 guys on the other night.
Yeah, they have.
So anybody who's listening, you know, go on the Facebook page. At the top, it's pinned, the Discord channel. You got to join up. We have a great time. If you want to talk about the hobby, just talk about whatever, listen to people complaining or having fun, you got to come in. It's great.
And also, if you haven't, I've been monitoring the Discord chat, and that even has people who don't get into our nightly build rooms. And that's hopping with back and forth conversations, sharing work. So it's really amazing the community we have built around this. And guys, keep up the great work. Share with each other. Commiserate with each other, encourage each other, but at the end of the day, have a lot of fun, because I know we are.
Always. Yeah. It sounds weird to say, but there are times I will log on, have my headset going, and I will not say a word and just listen to everybody just be who they are. It's a blast. It makes the modeling so much more fun.
Like my man Tyler sneaks in there at the bottom of the screen. No one knows he's there. He just listens. He's part of the community, but he's the silent member, so.
I don't even think I've heard him talk yet. Not ever.
He's the one, he's got the kids who go to bed early and he mutes. And
yes.
He's
right.
Like, so we're his entertainment at night. We're his television.
Absolutely.
These Canadians, man, they're taking over these Canucks.
And rightly so.
God. So Justin, what is on your bench?
So lately I've actually been waiting for an airbrush hose to get here. My airbrush hose for some reason decided to blow a seal or something. So I had to order an airbrush hose. I've been stuck not painting. So I have the top side of the hashtag flying drumstick buddy build EA6B Prowler. I have that painted, the top side. And the bottom side I have pre-inked for pre-shading. And then that's when my air hose decided to just leak. So I've been waiting on that to get here. Just came in this morning. So I'm going to get back to painting on that, do the underside colors and the armament. But in the meantime, I've just been tooling around, putting together some stuff here and there, you know, future paint projects. I did get what's called an inspiration box from the Sprue Box, which is James Skiffin's baby over in from the Just Making Conversation podcast, where it's a quarterly subscription box. So you pay monthly. Every quarter you get a box with a bunch of stuff in it. This one was a German tractor and some weathering powder, some rust powders and stuff like that. So I've been kind of fiddling with that a little bit. I got some 3D printed dinosaurs that I've been fiddling around with. Spraying some primer on those again while waiting for the airbrush hose to get here. But for the most part, it's just kind of hanging out in the build room and keeping the hands moving, keeping me out of trouble.
Can I ask you something, Justin?
Absolutely.
About that care package thing you were talking about with Skiffins. What's in that care package that you got? What is it? But was it different every time?
So he calls it the inspiration box. And each time they send one out, it's a different kit and different things to do in it. So I first heard them talk about it, I think, one of their episodes in October, September. He is Just Making Conversation, if I did not mention it,
right.
That podcast. So they mentioned it before, and that particular month's release was something to do with figure painting. And I was like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. Let me look into it. And it's, I think, £15 per month is the top tier. And I figure, you know what, that I can wrangle that. I'll just get rid of one subscription service I've got TV on to cover the cost of that. So they send out a box. My initial one had two coffee mugs, three tins of rust-colored powders, pigments, that I think they grind up and bag up themselves. And this particular one came with a German tractor and then a bunch of other little tchotchkes. I think there was a sticker.
Was there any how-to literature with it? With how to use the...
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, not so much a how to use, but a here's your inspiration box. This is what came with it, and this is what the intention is. Make sure you post up. They do have their own Discord channel that you have access to with videos and live chats, live stuff like that.
Hold on. So, time out. So, I'm following here. This is sold through their podcast.
No, it's James Skiffins does it. That's his thing for a living, is the Sprue Box.
Oh, okay. I have fucking over my head.
Sorry. Now, you know what? I probably wasn't as eloquent as I could have been.
Which is normally how it is with you.
Yeah, exactly. James Skiffins has a company that they call the Sprue Box. He's also on the Just Making Conversation
podcast. Now I understand. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So, and when he was talking about it, I was like, that's a freaking cool idea.
That
is
cool. I got to look into that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little pricey when it comes to shipping because he's got to get it across the, he's got to get it across the pond. But, you know, you're only paying for the shipping when the box goes out.
No, they're good guys.
You know what I mean?
We'll promote that. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned it. Hopefully some guy, whoever doesn't listen to that podcast or is familiar with it, maybe look into it now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, it's kind of exciting because you don't know what you're going to get.
You like that.
And it's, totally. And it'll push you to try different things that you can transform into whatever your major hobby is.
What does the shipping run?
This particular instance, it was 25 pounds to ship. He messaged me after the fact. He goes, hey, is it all right? You know, is this still okay? You know, shipping's going to be a little bit more expensive because you're across the pond. I was like, by all means, man, just tell me what it is and where to send it, and I'll send you the shipping. So, but yeah, if you want to expand your skill level or whatever, take a look into that thing. Cause like I said, I like that you don't know what you're going to get thing. You know, it'll teach you a thing or two about what you do.
All right, we're going to move on now. That was great. And I like that little that we talked about was on the bench. So that's something that we should continue to do from each podcast. We want to move into our second topic, and Dr. Dave is going to be participating in all the segments today as a co-host, but this is not something that I was pushing to talk about, but this is something that the other guys in the podcast wanted to discuss, and that was Photo Etch. Trust me, I don't know if anybody wants to hear me talk about Photo Etch for 3 hours, so we're going to try to do a condensed discussion. I'm going to try to answer questions regarding Photo Etch from my co-hosts. So let's start with Mr. Justin Ryan. What would you like to know about Photo Etch on your end?
So as an aircraft modeler, we are really only relegated to our interactions with Photo Etch to be seatbelts or little detailed things here or there. So, I mean, it always confounded me when I'd hear you talking about different brands. Rob, can you tell us about the different things we can experience as Photo Etch when you get into the model armor world?
Well, I will say this. I mean, those who know me know that I'm a big Photo Etch guy. I have been for many years. We talked about it on past podcasts. I do like Photo Etch. I got into it years ago after like reading, you know, Tony Greenland's Panzer Modeling book. We discussed it at length. It was always something that I always thought looked really cool, and it really brought some life and a little personal touch in some ways. I know that they're prefabricated, but it also adds a little bit more to a particular kit, especially like a Tamiya kit that is molded great. I always will say that Tamiya models are always the best molded kits in a lot of ways, but lack a lot of detail. And these Photo Etch sets for me add some detail that are missing on a lot of these kits, not to mention other things that you can't fix with Photo Etch. But for the most part, Photo Etch can add a lot to a kit. When it comes to sets, like you're using Edward. Now, Edward is very big in the aircraft community. I know that. Cockpits, like you said, seatbelts. And it's excellent for aircraft. Now, I don't do aircraft anymore. I did years ago, and I'm not really familiar with a lot of the sets that are available today. But Edward for armor, in my opinion, is terrible. It's nickel-based. It doesn't solder. I think that their sets are very, I'm going to say basic in the sense. Like if you look at a set for like a particular kit, let's say like a King Tiger set from Edward, just the way everything is made, it's very basic. The tool clamps to the fittings to the side skirts, they lack a lot of detail than the sets like an Aber or a Voyager or Passion models or an ET model sets. Yon models is another one. Tetra is another one. These are very, very good Photo Etch sets that I use as an armor model. I'm more of an Aber ET models guy. I do use Voyager. I use some Tetra, Yon models, also Ratto. Is awesome, amazing detail sets that they have, or upgrades to certain things. But there are a lot of different companies Justin, each have their own pros and cons. Some sets are more comprehensive than others. Voyager, in my opinion, is probably the most comprehensive set you can get, but there's a trade-off. They're also much more difficult to put together. So as a good example is, like, for instance, I just did, did the SU-76i. So if I want to make a set of fenders on a, let's say, a Panzer III, and I'm using Eber fenders, that fender set, they might have the framing, the tread plating might be two parts. So the whole framing is one piece, the tread plate's another. In a Voyager set, the framing might be six parts, and the tread plating might be three. So they're upping the number. So the fact that those sets come in multiple parts increases the difficulty, because the more you have to solder, the more, like, well, we'll get into soldering, but the more you have to solder or whatever you do to put them together, you risk breaking other parts off or, you know, messing it up more because of the extra steps it takes to create that one piece that you could do with Eber in two or pass your models in three or whatever. So.
Okay.
But that's the basic sets in with PhotoWatch, especially for Armada. Now, in ships, there's a ton of other companies. I cannot get into ship PhotoWatch. I cannot speak on ships because I don't build them. So I can't really tell you the sets that are available. But what I can say is I know from what I've seen for ship modeling, some of those sets are, first of all, amazing. I mean, in the scale that they're doing this stuff, this PhotoWatch, some of these groups that I belong to on Facebook, like P Masters and things like that, I'll post a model with PhotoWatch on it, and some guy's posting like a ship that's decked out in PhotoWatch with the railings, the guns. And you're like, should I take my post down, man? This is like bad compared to what this guy put up. But it takes a certain level of skill to do what those ship modelers do with that PhotoWatch, I will say.
Yeah, like the set that I got for the 200 Bismarck is Pontos. That's one of the big names for ship stuff.
Okay.
And I bet you that box weighs like 3 pounds, man. It's like 15 full-size sheets, not these little things, plus barrels, plus decks, plus everything, but it costs as much as the model.
Right. There's a reason why those are expensive, and there's a couple of guys that actually make homemade type of sets. They make them themselves, and they're very expensive, especially for the 160 scale kits. There's one guy, I can't really pronounce his name, and I'm not going to say it here, I'm going to butcher it, but he's from Poland. If anybody's ever seen him, he makes his own PhotoWatch set. He does the full interiors of these kits, everything. And one time he did like a fender set for the 1/16 scale Panzer IVs from Trumpeter. I'm like, wow, it was a freaking awesome. I need a set. And I'm like, how much for a set of the fenders? It's like $260. I'm like, for fenders? F that. I'll just use the kit ones. I mean, I'm not cheap by any means, but wow, $260 for a set of PhotoWatch for fenders is a lot of money. So again, using PhotoWatch does add to the cost of building the models, but it also adds a level of detail. People say, wow, Rob, you do a really good job on PhotoWatch, but it wasn't something like I just got up one day and I was like, ooh, I'm going to make PhotoWatch for this kit. I did it, you know, with no problem. It took years to learn a good technique to be able to make these products or make these things before I ever got to where I am today. I probably wasted more money on PhotoWatch than I did spending since then. I would destroy sets, and then I would be driving home from work, I'd be thinking about how to do something, and a different way would pop in my mind, like, oh my God, when I get home, I got to try it out. And I would try it, I'm like, holy shit, it worked. It, just like anything, you have to practice at it, PhotoWatch being another one. I mean, you just don't wake up one day and you're like a master PhotoWatch maker. You have to practice. I mean, you have to have some basic skills to be able to do it, but I think that over time, if you keep practicing and trying it, not get frustrated, you will figure it out, and you'll enjoy it.
The thing with PhotoWatch is it's not like a requirement to use every single
piece. Right.
You use what you're most comfortable or what you feel that you want to do.
I try every piece, but if it fucks up, I don't get heartbroken over it.
Right. Well, this is what I tell people to do. When you're going to build a certain subject and you have, let's say, that PhotoWatch from, let's say, Eber that complements that particular kit that you're going to be building. First, you look at the kit. Look at the kit parts, look at the PhotoWatch, go through the instructions, see what's being updated and what's being done in the PhotoWatch set of how to upgrade it. And then you decide if you want to use something or not before you cut things off on your model. So what happens is some people will cut things off on their model before they make the part in PhotoWatch or the piece that's going to upgrade the kit part, let's say. And they realize that, oh shit, I fucked this part up, I can't make it, or something happens, but they already cut the part off the kit. So you got to decide if you're going to use a part before you make it and cut it off your model. Because once you're committed, you're either going to screw up that model or you're going to have to go with the PhotoWatch that you screwed up. So you got to always review the model first, then decide what you're going to replace. Make it first in PhotoWatch before you cut it off the model. Because once you cut it off the model again, you're committed to my buddy Steve is pointing at himself. And I know a lot of people get frustrated. They wind up putting the kit to the side. They put the PhotoWatch set to the side. In my seminars, I say the same thing to people when it comes to making PhotoWatch, is when to use PhotoWatch, how to use PhotoWatch, and why to use PhotoWatch. And you need to know when, why, and how to use it and when you should be cutting it off the model. So that's a big thing, because if you, once you're committed, you know, then you got to do something. Then you're going to be scratch building your own part because you just cut it off your model. And not everything needs to be upgraded. Like Santucci had said, and he's pointing himself, you know, not everything needs to be used on a fret. Now, for the most part, for myself, I'll probably use anywhere from, you know, half of a fret to 3/4 of a fret of photo edge for a set. Usually about 1/4 to 1/3 of the set I never use, because some things just don't need to be replaced. And a matter of fact, sometimes the photo etch is actually inferior to what the kit has on it. So just because it's photo etch doesn't mean it's better. But there's certain things that make the kit better. Like in my opinion, like workable mud guards for a Panzer III or a Panzer IV or some German type of vehicle, you know, that's going to make the model better. Okay, now you got three. Now, this is not by any means time to start debating 3D printing to photo etch. You know, we already know the benefits of 3D printing. I don't want anybody sending me fucking hate mail again because I mentioned 3D printing. But like,
Bob Riviezzo.
Goes back to, let's say, Shermans. Do you want to use the kit light guards on them that's way out of scale? Or do you want to use a set of photo etch light guards? Now, I know my buddy Steve Santucci talked about that. Oh, well, you know, that's flat. Well, Sherman light guards were flat. They were rounded and they were flat. There was no roundness to them. But the thing is now they make 3D printed ones that are really good, but those are very, very fragile. You know, they might give you 5 of them on a 3D printed, whatever the fuck they call it. What do they call it?
Build plate.
But one little snip before you took a thing off, you're going to break that in half. And another thing is you can't do battle damage with 3D printing. You can do it with photo etch. So
I had to deal with that some on the ship I'm working on. I cut off some parts. And then as I was putting together, it was the boat davits that the boats stand on. They're really tiny pieces. And as I folded them in half, the hinge point just sheared into 2 separate pieces.
Right.
I didn't have any going back. Now, so right. I used super glue, smacked those 2 suckers together. But if I hadn't cut those off, I would have had another option.
Right. And then that brings us to the next thing. Like, what are you going to use for your photo etch? Now, the best thing to do is solder. Using metal to make metal stay on other pieces of metal is the way to go, because it can't break it off and it won't snap off. People have the most issues with their photo etches because they're using super glue. Now, there's a lot of different super glues out there. I use the VMS Flexi for CA. I think it's the best out there. Matter of fact, I think the MIG Ammo Black super glue is actually really, really good too. I like that. But you don't really use super glue on photo etch to photo etch unless it's really small and you can't solder. And then sometimes you can't solder because the photo etch is too small. You got to use super glue. But for the most part, you should be soldering your bigger parts to bigger parts of photo etch, like part to part. Like if you're making a set of fenders, you should be like soldering from the underneath, or like a fuel tank. You'll see a tutorial that I've done on that, that you're going to solder, because it's, you can dent it up. It's never going to break apart. You could sand it smooth and you'll never know that you ever have metal to metal. I use a 35-watt Weller, a soldering iron with like a needle tip, like a pointed tip. I use 6236-2 silver bearing solder. I use the Alpha Metals liquid solder. Some people say, oh, well, it's liquid. Don't want to use the paste. I've used paste before. I personally don't like it. I like the liquid. It just is easier for me. I just apply it with like a micro brush. And I applied a solder to it. And it's just like, if anybody's tried it, it actually works really well. But it all comes down to the tip of your soldering iron. If you're using a very big tip and you're trying to solder, you know, small photo etch, you're going to fuck it up. You're going to get solder everywhere and it's going to be hard to clean up. Now, you can clean solder off because it's very soft. But you want to also make sure that you're soldering in the places you want to solder. Like you tack weld it first and then you go in and you clean it up by spreading the solder around the part. You know, that's really important. Tape is your friend. When you have your stuff taped down, like let's say on a tile, which I do, people try to solder like, and it's sliding all over their workbench. No, no, no. You tape it down, and if the heat makes the stickiness stick to the photo etch, you just get a wet Q-tip and just wipe it on the metal, and it pulls it right up. So you don't have to worry about that.
I'm going to give Rob props on that, because I watched his little tutorial video, and last year I bought an Extronic 3020 adjustable. I bought the liquid flux, and I've started to solder, when appropriate, my photo etch. And I managed to do a jerry case rack for a 1/72 scale Panzer II. That was my big accomplishment for 2023, right? So I just bought a ship model. I've done ship photo etch. And by the way, if you're doing a ship, White Ensign is the company you want to go and look at besides Pontos. Pontos and White Ensign are two of the best photo etch makers, aftermarket stuff for ship models. They make fantastic products. But I'm sold on the soldering. I like doing that if I can over the glue, and it works really well. But the adjustable temperature, sharp needle, and definitely, I work on a tile. I grabbed a tile from my wife's spares for when she cracks me over the head with one. So I grabbed a tile and I work on one of those because I may have melted a cutting mat. Maybe. I don't know. Between friends. I'm a photo etch guy. I do armor. So I'm used to it. I don't buy a lot. I'm not like Rob, who has single-handedly financially supported the entire Polish photo etch industry over the last 2 years. Huzzah.
That makes me feel good, Frankie, because, again, it's to inspire people. That's why when I do seminars or do the videos, it's meant to show people different ways to do it. Like, people are like, how do you do those tool clamps? People are like, well, I can never do tool clamps. And I made the video of how easy it is to do tool clamp. Frankie, how many did I do? I think I did like 10 tool clamps. Yep. Well, I think I've videoed me doing like three of them or four of them, but I could bang out a tool clamp like in a minute. As long as it's all cleaned up off the fret, all I do is bend them up. But it's finding a technique or something that works for you. And the key to doing those things is tape. You put tape down, so that way when it's on the tape, you can manipulate it, but it's not flinging all over the place. That's what people have a problem. Like they're trying to hold it in their tweezer or they're holding it on their bench and it's slipping all over the place. Double-sided tape. Put some tape, painter's tape, roll it over. It's laid on your table or on a, like I laid on like a little cutting mat or something. And that's how you work with it. Once you find the system that works for you with the photo etch, it makes it a lot easier. Tools. Tools are the biggest thing when it comes to working with photo etch. So everybody needs a good photo etch bender, you know, to do bigger parts. Dispay makes a great photo etch bender. RP Tools makes a great photo etch bender. They make big ones, small ones. And they also have like the rolling pins or the metal rods, what do they call them, to do like dowels so you can make rounded parts and things like that. You need good tools. Me, the biggest tool in my arsenal when it comes to photo etch is my flat-nosed pliers. I do 90% of my bending with my plier. As long as it's flat nose, you can bend it any way you want. And the noses are perfectly flat, so I can use it on the table to make bends or something like that. So it's all about the tools. If you have the right tools and you have the right equipment, soldering iron, the right glue, and it's okay to clean things up. When you're soldering and if it gets all over the place, but it's not like obstructing detail, you can trim that off, scrape it off, sand it off, and clean it up nice and neat. And that's what I usually do on my parts. But people are so afraid to try something new. Like I tell people, be prepared to waste a lot of photo etch, but the more you practice, the better it will be. When people take the seminar that I give, they leave saying, you know, wow, that's not as hard as I thought it would be. And they go home, I give them, you know, a list of what they should buy. They buy and it's not expensive. And they like message me back and they'll take pictures. Hey, this is what I did. This is awesome. Thank you so much. I mean, it adds to the hobby. Workable mudguards or workable toolboxes. On my SU-76i, if you look at a picture of it, it's got the T-60-70 toolboxes on the side with the box opens and closes. Now, granted, it's a static model, so you're not going to be playing with it, but how much better is it to have a toolbox that's opened up so you can show the stuff inside than having a toolbox that's closed? It adds a little visual interest to your model when you have things that are open and showing what's in there, and you can only do that with photo etch.
Now, you can keep that toolbox closed and not put anything in it, and then you're fine.
The whole idea is if you want to try to fucking, or you can dent it up and bend the freaking toolbox and bend the lift. When you're building a model, you want to try to do something that separates yours from somebody else's. So if you're building and you're going, let's say if you're a show person and you're going to a show and you have your Sherman on a table, a particular version of a Sherman, and somebody else has a Sherman just like yours, if you both built it out of the box, like I've said this before, it's the same. Now, granted, it's paint different, whatever, but I know, stowage. But in essence, it's the same thing. What are you going to do to separate your model from the other person's? What can you do to add to the hobby to make it more enjoyable? Now, some people fucking hate photo etch, right? Some people swear it off. I hate photo etch. I hate photo etch. Well, if you never tried it, or if you tried it but didn't give it a chance, you'll realize how good photo etch can do to enhance your hobby. And I don't care about what 3D printing's done. And I don't want to get into that debate about what's easy and what's not easy or what takes the hobby out of the hobby. We've had that discussion before and the hate mail has been read. The whole idea is with photo etch, I think that it can make you a better modeler if you're able to conquer your fear of photo etch. Just like I need to conquer my fear of flying so I can go to Japan.
Yep.
Or go to the IPMS Nationals in Wisconsin.
It's just like those Metal Earth kits, right, that you can buy. That's all photo etch.
All photo etch.
But that's a complete photo etch. This is not like you're building light guards or you're putting, you know,
bending. No, but I'm saying they're a little bit cheaper to get into, and yeah, and they don't require glue or anything. Everything's held together with tabs and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Tabs. Oh, there's something the photo etch should start considering. But hey, Rob, I've got a serious question. For those who are naive to photo etch, which direction do you bend that stuff? Because you can make a mistake and it falls apart like it has happened to some of us.
Right. Well, the whole idea is when, you know, obviously most photo etch is what we call it. It's notched out where it needs to be bent, right?
Scored.
But scored. What direction? In, out, the where the scoring is.
Well, you should always bend into the score, in, not in. Out of the score.
Yeah, in.
But if you bend it too many times, it's going to break.
Right, because it's so super thin at that point.
Right. So what I do sometimes, if I build something that has those notches and I think that I'm going to be manipulating it a lot while handling it, I'll still always just throw a little solder in those corners and then clean it up just for a little added strength so I don't break it. Now, has that happened to me where I've bent it maybe one too many times and it breaks? Sure. Most people that'll break and they're like, fuck, I screwed this up and throw it out. No. Put it on the table, get your tape out, put that down, make your right angle, get your soldering iron out and put a little solder in the corner and you just save the part. You could fix that, you know? So yeah, that does happen though, Tooch. And I know that for some people it happens probably a lot, but that could be fixed.
Now, there was something you just stuck in there using tape, like a masking tape or the blue tape.
Yeah.
And that's a great benefit because A, you keep that small photo etch piece in one place, stationary. And not just for soldering, but you could use it for the construction of when you have to build something up from that, right?
Right. And a good example is how to make a workable mud guard on a tank to make a hinge, right? Well, I've seen some people, like they say to me, how do you do the hinges? How do you make those hinges workable? How do you make those hinges look like hinges? And I say, well, what are you doing to do those hinges? And they'll tell me, I'm like, you're doing it all wrong. You take your hinges, you make your right angles where the hinges are, right? And each, you put the hinges together, interlocking them. And then you put a wire in the middle and you put it on top of tape. That way it doesn't move on you. And then you take a chisel blade, you bring your hinges down, and then you take your chisel blades and you roll those back ends of those hinges underneath the wire. And now you got a workable hinge. But the key to that is tape, because people will try to make those things, like I said, on their workbench. They'll try to do it like in a little, sometimes they make these jigs, like Aber makes a jig for hinges. You got to use tape because the only way you can make those is if everything's immobilized. It can't be moving on you. You got to be able to manipulate it without it sliding everywhere. I should make a video of how I do the hinges because it'll make life easier for people. But it's so easy to do. And it's a good example of what you talked about, Tooch. I think that people go about it the wrong way and don't realize how easy it is and how much it adds to your model when you have a workable mud guard on your tank where you can have it open, closed, bent, sideways, whatever, other than just using a kit one.
Right. And obviously not only being able to move, but the thinner malleable metal that it is makes it easier to dent and make it more realistic as opposed to doing the old school thinning out the plastic and trying to bend it without breaking it, etc.
Right, photo etch is going to be much more scale thickness in a lot of ways, maybe just slightly above, but it's still scale thickness. But a good idea, if you're talking about it being manipulated, is some photo etch needs to be annealed. And I know people gave me a hard time about, oh, you don't have to dip in the mortar. I understand that the dipping in the water doesn't affect the annealing of it. But annealing is heating up the metal. And I know people are going to start sending me fucking messages. Oh, you talked about it wrong. I don't care. This is what I do. I'm telling people what I do. I freaking take a, if I want to make a fuel tank, I'll take the fuel tank metal, if I got to roll it, I'll heat it over a flame until it gets red, or start lighting up, and I freaking dip it in water to cool it off quick. I know the cooling off doesn't affect it, but that's what I do so I don't burn myself. And then I take my metal dowel or something equivalent, and I'll roll it around the metal piece or the dowel to get the round shape. And while it's on the dowel, because the heat's not going to affect the dowel, I'll solder the fuel tank on top of the dowel as the guide, and that will keep it together and give me a round tube of photo etch.
I'd rather just buy a fucking tube and cut it to length.
Well, I mean, you could do that too. I mean, you could do that.
Yeah.
And I do have tubing that I do buy from K&S, and it all is good. But it's sometimes hard to find the exact diameter of what those fuel tanks are.
Yeah, and then you need saws to cut that stuff.
One thought about the rods you were talking about, rather than getting a set, I just use the shank of a drill bit. They come in all sizes. I've got them in my drawer anyway.
You can use that. I mean, listen, you got to.
That's what I do too.
We all go out in our everyday life, whether we're at the store, the hardware store, you're out there and you're always looking around and you see things. And the first thing that comes to your mind is, can I use that for my hobby? Right? We're all, what's the word I'm looking for?
Resourceful. Resourceful.
You're always mindful of what's around you and what benefits you have. Like, you've never said, oh my God, this would be perfect for this. For instance, is a good example. Like, I built a T3485 from Trumpen years ago on 1/16 scale, but I wanted to make the bed spring on. And I'm like, I want to make it myself, but where am I going to find the 1/35 scale springs are too small. Oh, even if I got the mesh from Aber, they don't make 1/16 scale mesh. It's 1/35 and it's too small for bed spring. And I was at the supermarket one day. And I'm down the aisle with my wife, and this is in the midst of me trying to figure this out. And I'm like, holy shit, this is perfect for bed springs. It was the fucking, you know, who's to put the little screen over your pot so the sauce doesn't come out?
Yeah.
The splatter guards?
Dude, talk about perfect bed spring armor in 1/16 scale. The pot screens that you put over your pot. Now, I'm always thinking of ways to use things in the hobby. I'm like yelling in the supermarket. I remember I said, what the fuck are you yelling at? I'm like, I found the perfect bed spring screen. She's like, what are you talking about? I'm holding it up like an idiot. There's people in the aisle looking at me like I'm a jerk. I'm like holding it up. I'm like, I found it.
As you buy 10 of them.
I did. I bought the whole lot that was there because who knows? I'll never see it again.
You know the true story why your wife doesn't take you grocery shopping anymore.
It's true. But the point I'm trying to make is like you don't realize there's a lot of things that are in our everyday life that's perfect for the hobby. And I'm always looking for something.
Well, it's like you talk about tape, right? I use 3M post-it notes before I cut my photo etch. I lay the photo etch on the post-it note and cut it, especially with ships, the little round pieces for portholes and stuff, because then it doesn't bing like it wants to.
Jeff Mathis, if he's listening, I haven't talked to him in years. He had a company years ago and he made this thing called the Fender Bender. Now, he only made a few. I had gotten a prototype when the company first was released. It's like a regular Etch-Mate, but it's got like the whole part of it like moves up and down so you can bend big pieces of photo etch without having to use like a razor or whatever. It just bends the fender in one shot. And he also made me these porous type cutting mats that was perfect for photo etch. And I still have them to this day, three big pieces. And that's what I use to cut my photo etches on these porous type cutting mats. I can't even... They're thick. It's not plastic, but it's like a cross between like plastic and wax in a lot of ways. That it's hard enough, but it's soft where the blade goes into when you cut the photo etch. So that way the photo etch doesn't spring and catapult away when you cut.
Like a plastic kitchen cutting board?
A little more softer than that.
Okay.
So,
But are you getting too much give? Because that's my problem. Like, that's why I try to cut on glass, right, with my photo etch, because I don't want that give underneath.
No. You want a little give, I think. That's how I've always felt.
I'm with you, Frank. I put a piece of tape down or a double-sided tape, put that on glass and the photo etch on it. And then when I go down, I've got something hard for the blade to cut into.
I always found that a softer cutting mat, not soft, like has a little give to it, is better for cutting the photo etch, in my experience. I'll show you guys how it is when we're in the room. I'll show you what I do.
And that's what Plasmo says, too. I believe he cuts on, like, acrylic or something like that. It's not, like, glass hard. It also doesn't fuck up your blade as fast. When you're cutting on glass, that blade gets dull real quick. I like my little Xeron cutters. They don't work for everything, but you can, most things. And you can trim off your little nubs, and you don't even have to file them off. So it saves on cleanup time.
Oh, you always got to sand a little bit off those photo etches. There's always a little bit that has to be sanded down. I use a diamond file. Like Tamari makes really, really good diamond files. I usually have like three brand new ones in the wings. But I always just use, my flat nose plier and just use a sanding stick to knock down the edges of the photo etch.
Yeah, I don't use files or anything. I haven't had anything that big that needs a hardcore file.
Not yet. Not till you get to that friggin' 200 ship that you've been sitting on. Move! Come on!
I still got to learn how to solder. I guess I got a good teacher here, but yeah.
And then like what Dr. Dave was saying when he was asking about painting photo etch or like metal barrels and things like that. And I had told Dave, there are companies out there like Mr. Hobby. They make like a primer for metal and you can brush paint it on and it's excellent. It dries like smooth or whatever. And it's really good to protect the metal barrel and maybe limit the flaking or chipping of paint. But I've also found that, especially if, like, from metal barrels or like the Photowitz barrels, like from Aber, if you lightly sand them at like a very, very high grit sanding stick, like a 1000 or a 2000 grit, and just lightly sand it just to give it just a slight rough texture, you'll never see it. But that also helps the paint to bite down on that metal. Like, I really don't do much to prime my metal parts, except this regular Mr. Surfacer when I prime on top. It has no problem with adhesion at all. And it's pretty durable as well. I haven't had any problems with any chipping. I know some people will only prime metal. Like Adam Wilder, he's the first one to say that. He doesn't prime his plastic. He said it's just a waste of paint. I just paint over my plastic. But I will prime my Photowitz and my metal pots. So some people prime the whole model, like myself. But other people just prime metal and just do paint right over plastic if they have to. Either way, it works.
You brought up good things that I even forgot going back earlier to your part of your conversation is, don't cut off the plastic piece until you know and have worked with the photo etch. I made that mistake with a Martyr II Tamiya kit. I got the Edward set for it for the fenders, and I had some issues, and things didn't go according to plan, and now I don't have any fenders on it. That means I have to figure out how to fix the metal fenders and get them on there.
Or get a new set and try again.
Yeah, exactly, or a new set and try it again.
Right, but don't use Edward, though.
Well, they were the only ones. Time. I was nascent. It was 4 years ago. What did I know?
And I know one time someone had messaged me and they said that they were having a hard time. And I'm not a fan of Photowitz Zimmerit. I mean, if you can stay away from Photowitz Zimmerit, especially from Edward, it's terrible. They're too uniform. It doesn't look right. It's terrible. But someone had messaged me a while ago. And at first I didn't understand what they were saying. And I had to get clarification. But they were having problems getting their Edward Zimmerit to stick on their Brumbaugh. And I was like, well, I don't understand. What do you mean to get it to stick? They're like, yeah, I mean, I'm using the glue and it's not sticking. I'm like, what glue are you using? And they're like, well, I'm using extra thin. That's meant for plastic to plastic. You're using metal and plastic. You have to use like a super glue or some sort of epoxy. So I said to this person, and this is the advice I'm going to give too, when it comes to using even resin Zimmerit, like an attack Zimmerit set or something like a pre-molded Zimmerit for a tank. Some people have a hard time getting it to stick or getting it to align right. What I always tell people is this. Make sure when you're using, let's say, a Zimmerit set, let's say on a Panther, is I use 5-minute epoxy and I put it in the middle of the panel and I get it nice and snug down and I move it around and it gives me an opportunity to get that lined up exactly where I want it before it cures. Because if you use super glue, your working time is a lot less and you're committed and you risk breaking the resin of the, well, not the Photowitz, but we now on to resin sheets, but the resin Zimmerit sets.
Yeah, but you can use PVA glue and solve that problem too.
Right, but the PVA glue is not going to be permanent. You can break it off. That can pop off. PVA glue is not, this like anything, you can use PVA glue to tack on plastic parts and you can pull those off with very little resistance.
Well, I don't know. I'm talking that ultra glue or whatever.
Oh no, well that's a little different. The MIG ammo ultra glue is different than just plain old, you know, Elmer's PVA glue.
Right. There is a difference for sure.
There's a big difference because that's a good question about gluing on photo etches, because that ultra glue is very, very good to glue on photo etch as well. Mm-hmm. What we call shear strength, right?
Yeah.
So right. With photo etch, we use a term called, what's the shear strength? VMS Flexi has got very, very high shear strength. So glue it on after it cures, how far back you have to pull for it to snap off. On the Flexi, it takes a lot of strength to pull off a piece of photo etch off a piece of plastic because of the shear strength. The PVA glue, the shear strength is probably within like a nanosecond of pull off. The ultra glue or the stuff from MIG is a lot different. That's got a much higher shear strength like a Flexi. But, and you know what? Maybe if you use PVA glue in the middle of the panel, but what I was trying to say is with the 5-minute epoxy, after you get your panels set where you wanted them to be set, once it cures, then you use super glue on the edges of your resin sheets. Because now it's exactly where you want it to be. You had a lot of working time to set it up. And now you use your super glue to make sure that there's no like raising of the panels of your Zimmerit. And then I would always recommend using some thin Tamiya putty, like in lacquer thinner, to fill any gaps, if there is one, that will fill anything. Sand it down. But we've got a little away from Photowitz, but it kind of this went into this whole Photowitz thing of using Photowitz Zimmerit.
I experimented yesterday because with like small parts, like these little pistol port covers that I was using yesterday, I just stuck them in place. To me, extra thin, let it sit for a minute, push it in a little bit, done. They don't move.
Well, you talk about the photo etch?
Yeah, I glued all my photo etch on here with extra thin. Just right, the little pieces.
But right? It's a little piece, and what you're doing is you melted the plastic enough where you were able to make an indention into the plastic for that to sit in.
Right. When the plastic cures, or when it cures again, it shrinks a bit and holds
it. Shrinks a bit, and you use what I would consider like a friction fit.
Yeah.
It's friction fit in there.
It seems to work pretty good.
Right, but I wouldn't recommend that with like bigger pieces.
No. It's certainly nothing structural or anything, but those little pistol ports, I was like, no problem.
But that's a good example of you figuring out something that worked for you that most people probably didn't do or thought of. You know, there's techniques out there that people learn, like, you know, fucking while they're on the bowl reading the freaking morning news. Sometimes the ways to do things, and anything in life, doesn't have to be modeling. It could be just trying to solve a problem in your own personal life that you're sitting there trying to think about ways to fix something. Like there's been times where, speaking of the hobby, where I was trying to do something in the hobby, whether it's a build or whatnot, trying to figure out how to do something, and things I've tried didn't work. And then I would have time to, like, you know, think about it. And I would say, you know what? That can work. Let me try it when I get home and I'll try it. Now, I'm not saying that I, you know, coined terms or came up with techniques. I don't think I'm that type of modeler, but sometimes you come up with ways to do things for yourself. And when you share them with other people, you know, they might work for them too. So like what you did with that pistol port might be a cool idea for maybe somebody else to try. I'll try it. I never thought about that.
Yeah, it works.
I actually just used that on that mini art tractor. Had a couple of little itty bitty photo etch things. I don't even know what the heck they do. That mounted to the very couple pieces of the engine. And I just softened that plastic up with extra thin and...
Look at this. You guys are in cahoots. I didn't even know that people were doing this. See, I'm learning something every day.
Yeah, and it works fucking good. Like, I just put the piece in place just like you would with plastic and just ran the glue around it and just held my finger on it for...
You think it's worked. I bet you go back there right now and get a blade to it. It'll snap right off like it was nothing.
They're fine.
Well, you're shaking it right now. Yeah, but I can do that too.
There's fucking five of them on here.
One just fell off.
No, didn't.
I just saw it fall.
But you did notice, though, that we went back to friction.
We did.
Friction is the glue that holds all of life together, whether high friction or low friction.
I mean, could I take a knife and pop them off? Probably. I haven't tested it. I don't see the need to. They're on there.
Exactly. Don't need to.
But Rob, let's talk about glue since we're on that topic. Like, obviously, these two knuckleheads found extra thin as a way to create for small thin parts to adhere to some level. And of course, once.
Well, it creates a mechanical bond, right?
It's yeah.
A mechanical bond.
To an extent, it does. You know, I know one night under the old group, it was Ron Smith, myself, and Jeff Hearn. There might have been one or two other people on. You were already in bed because it was past 8 p.m.
No shit.
It was when Jeff was starting out with the resin printing of tracks, and he had liquid resin lying around, and I don't know, him and Ron and us, we were just bantering back and forth, and the next thing you know, Jeff takes out an old ship model, and he puts a photo etch railing on it, and he lays the liquid on it, puts it in there, and hits it with the UV light, and all of a sudden, boom, it's rock solid. It's actually part of the kit now. It required a great deal of force outside of the usual handling for it to break off. And that's something else that's kind of been, you know, that was accidentally found one night when we were in a discussion.
Yeah, and you see a lot of guys using it as filler now, too, the resin, right?
Tamaya has, they've had a light curing putty for a long time. A long time. It's been around for years and years and years. And with the advent of 3D printing, now the light curing, like what you saw Jeff using, was the type of resin that he uses, the light curing resin with his little light that he has that he gives you, that they found works great. And it also, that'll definitely work for photo etch as well.
As long as the UV waves can get to it.
Yeah.
Can get to it. And a lot of times that covered up by the two pieces of metal too.
Exactly.
But you could.
Well, Rob and I started using PVA for stuff, but we didn't even talk about it. And so one day I'm like, I'm using AK Wolverine PVA, and it's great for my photo etch. And then Adams pulls up. He's got the MIG ammo PVA, starts laughing because we're basically, you know, both kind of using that. I like using the PVA. I'm looking forward to the UV light, but I definitely like the switch over to these PVAs that have an extra polymer in them or something in them.
Something else is in there. They're not like, this is not Elmer's glue.
Yeah, because it sticks right away,
too. Or like Mod Podge.
It doesn't cure right away, but it sticks right away.
It's all a concentration. So Mod Podge is basically PVA with acrylic gel medium mixed into it. Then there's PVA, but then I believe these extra tacky PVAs are really just a concentration of PVA. But I'm not a chemist, so I don't know.
But you did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, so
I did not.
I like PVA on small photo etches, especially on the ships, because they don't leave the glops of super glue. And if there is extra, you can clean it off without ruining the attachment.
Yeah.
Right. If there's a little extra super glue, just and it's a little too much on an area, I mean, you can just take a little debonder. VMS makes a debonder, MIG makes a debonder ammo. You just put a little drop of debonder where the super glue is, let it sit for like a minute. I take like a needle type of Q-tip. And I just rub it off and I'll clean up any super glue that's in an area that I don't want it to be. Listen, my builds are clean, but they don't always look clean when I'm done building them. They look clean when I'm done building them before I take pictures because I clean up any areas that might have issues.
Right.
I always make sure that after I do photo etch and stuff like that, or put details on models, even when there's nothing on there, I make sure that the model's clean because when you prime it, there's nothing worse than having to go back and clean up a model after you put paint on it. Right, Mr. Adams?
Yeah, you're right. That happened to me the other day. I was fucking painting away, and I'm like, oh, motherfucker.
You don't usually see a lot of things, especially like super glue goes unnoticed until you put paint on top, and then you see it prominently. And you want to make sure that you clean that up. You can sand it off. But once you start putting paint down and you got to clean that up, then you got to, yeah, you can maybe clean up that area. But I always find it's better just fucking strip the whole thing and start fresh.
Is that why you strip yours?
I did. I did strip the SU-76i. Listen, I don't know how anybody uses Windex to strip their models, but even though I use Mr. Surfacer lacquer base with the levelant thinner, it still reacts to alcohol. So I always have like huge bottles of 91%. I just put it in a bin and I just dump alcohol on top of it and I get a little soft brush while I'm inside there and I just rub the model. And before you know it, all the paint comes off. I take it out. I let it dry.
With the amount of fucking shit you have hanging off your models, I wouldn't even attempt that.
Yeah.
Ping, 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 fucking.
No, it won't ping because it's all in liquid.
No, but you're still having to brush it, right?
Soft brush that I use. And for the most part, most of my stuff isn't coming off because it's usually secured really well. Listen, I do a lot of drilling too. So when I add details into my model, a lot of times I'll drill and I kind of like have like an anchor to things, right? So when I'm using, let's say, and then we're going back to photo etch. This is good because this is a fucking, this is a Mod Podge of, we'll use Mod Podges with a Mod Podge of fucking discussions, right? A potpourri.
It all overlaps, so.
I see people struggle when they're using, let's say, and I use this example all the time with fenders. If they're using photo etch fenders and using, taking the kit fenders off, using photo etch fenders on, you have to anchor those on your model. You can't just like glue the little connection points on the side of your model, hold them until they're nice and tight and strong, and then take it off and not think that you're not going to knock those fenders off in the course of building as you're going. The best way to combat that is what I do is I drill holes into the hull and I take rod and I put them into the anchor points of the fenders and I solder them in there. So when I glue them to the model, I'm putting the rods into the holes as an anchor point.
Well, you're pinning it. That's what that's called.
Exactly. I call it anchoring. You call it pinning.
Okay.
You're pinning them into the model, and it's anchored. So it's got so much strength that you can hit that 8 ways to Sunday. That sucker ain't coming off. You can actually even do even more battle damage on your model because you can bend it with a plier because it's not going to come off because it's now anchored onto the model. And that's the way I think people should do it. And they have to just think out of the box a little bit. Like we talked about starting up a YouTube channel for the podcast. I mean, I have my own. Rob has his own. But there are some tutorials. I mean, I don't know if I could do full builds. I just don't have that time. But I can maybe do a tutorial on how to do certain things and maybe have it up for people to see how I do it. Again, it's how I do it. It doesn't mean it's the right way. It's the way I do it, and it works for me. I don't expect
people. It's the right way for Rob.
Right. Some people come back, and they like, don't get me wrong. When I uploaded one of my videos on my Facebook page, and then eventually went on the YouTube channel, whether it was to do the fuel tanks or whatnot, I had people messaging me or responding on the page about, oh, well, I gave the wrong details on how to solder or what the amount of heat it takes to melt the solder. I was like, are you fucking kidding me, man? Does it really matter? I said that it takes 700 degrees. Does it matter that it's 731 degrees? that I'm using the wrong verbiage when I'm describing it. So I'm going to put a disclaimer. Whatever I say works for me. Might not work for you. So I'm just telling you what works for me when it comes to it. So listen, it was good talking about Photo Etch, and I know it was a brief overview. We're not going to get too in-depth about things. It was just a little discussion. But I will say that Photo Etch is not for everybody. You want to give it a try, I definitely recommend it. It definitely will make your models better regardless of what subject you do. You don't have to feel obligated that because you spend $20 on a set that you have to use everything. You don't need to use everything. Some things will improve the model definitely, but some things don't.
Well, if you want to burn up your leftover shit, add Greeblies to your Star Wars kits or whatever, right?
It absolutely
doesn't matter what it came from. That AT-ST that I did was full of it.
Right. I keep all my sets, even after I'm done, I keep a used Photo Etch part in my drawer. If I needed something miscellaneous for a kit, I have that little stash to go to. I'll add certain things and not. But there's also things that you can make on your own that are better than it's in a Photo Etch set or on the model, like springs and antennas, things like that.
Things.
Sometimes you got to think out of the box. So, all right. So we're going to move on, and we are going to go to our next segment, which is going to be new kits in the news. I don't know if there's a lot of new kits, but there might be some. Frankie Donati shaking his head like a little kid at McDonald's wanting another shake, milkshake. And he's slapping his hands too. He wants more. All right, Justin, we're going to go with you. What is new on the new kits in the news front, according to Justin Ryan?
Well, it's not really according to me. I found all this on themodelingnews.com. But Trumpeter is releasing a new 72nd scale A6 Intruder sometime this year. Modeling News did not have a date, but it does look like it is on the cusp of coming out. This thing is having over 250 parts, comes with canopy masks, and it, if I'm not mistaken, the photos that I saw on at the Modeling News shows that it may have that wingfold option that Navy builders enjoy the most. I also saw that Revell has some small scale stuff coming up, and they are interesting. First one that I got is a 144th scale Airbus A330-300 in a Lufthansa livery. Probably did not say that right, but that's all right. You got what I was trying to say. This one here is showing 105 parts, and according to the Modeling News, boasts a carefully designed cockpit for an authentic look and highly detailed nose gear bay for impressive display. They also have a 144th scale Eurofighter Typhoon with 63 parts, and they are touting it as ideal for experienced model builders with a detailed cockpit, elaborate landing gear, and two ASRAAM guided missiles. And this one, this next one, it's my last one. It's kind of exciting for me. Even if it isn't the American Iron I was hoping for, they are releasing a German S3/6 B18 Express locomotive with tender. This is a steam locomotive that was in use from like 1918 to 1931 over in Europe and Germany. This kit has 154 parts, and I suggest a 13-plus-year-old builder, so it looks like it's another experienced builder kit.
What scale is that?
187.
It's like their big boy in...
Yeah, correct. Yes, it's HO scale, so that's 187th to you and me.
Okay.
Comes with a detailed smoke box and boiler and the well-detailed coal tender and chassis. It shows two markings and details for two separate German rail lines. So if you're a modeler that really wants to get into crazy weathering stuff, this looks like it might be a kit, because I don't know if you've ever seen any of the steam engines from America, but they get nasty. And I'm excited for that one. I'm going to probably pick that up when it comes out. I've got the big boy in the stash. I did the New York Central Hudson a few years back. That was a good one, too. It'll get my juices flowing for when I do start that model railroad in the basement.
Fucking wheels, 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 wheels.
Yeah, this one looks like it's a 362 or a 361 configuration, which is three wheels in the front, six main drive wheels, and then one balancing wheel in the rear of the thing. But yeah, there's a lot of wheels and pistons and all sorts of shit.
Yeah, like I did that 35th scale BR-52.
Yeah.
That thing's fucking huge.
Yeah, well, that would be more like G scale, so.
That thing was like slaying a dragon.
I bet it was. I bet. Well, that's all that I've got in new kits in the news. Let's go over to Frankie. Frankie, what have you got?
I started watching a few of the Nuremberg videos just to see Nuremberg Toy Fair, which was end of January, first couple of days into February. Lots of stuff coming out, like Revell Type 9 C40, U190 and 1/144th scale. They got a real cool looking 1/200 tugboat called the Smit Houston. There's a release of the HMS Beagle Darwin ship in 196, which looks really nicely detailed. They also in 135th are doing a Mercedes Cabriolet, sort of a Nazi chop top. They're also doing a BM-13, which is an early rocket launcher, Russian one, which looks pretty cool in 135th. It also seems to be the year of the Leopard, because Tamiya announced the Leopard. Revell's got the two Leopard 2 A6M Plus and in 135th, and they've got the A7V in 172nd, so that's churning out. They've also got their car kits, like they've got the Trabant, if everyone knows the Trabant, the Eastern European Wunder car from East Germany that would never be passed anywhere else in the world. And then World of Warcraft figures, like the Lich King and the Thrall. So Revell... What?
World of Warcraft figures? Who's doing that? Revell?
It's Revell, yeah.
Revell, yep.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and they look nice, Rob. Check them out. The molds.
What scale are those?
I didn't get the scale. I just saw them showing up there. And then Edward had a real, they did a show, like a PowerPoint. So for the aircraft guys, for this year, P-51B in 148, a new tooling, P-51D in 172nd, Mr. Malone, 172nd Albatross D3 in 172nd, 148 BF-17F, apparently based on the HK models B-17. So maybe Masters of Air will start to increase some interest in the Flying Fortress. They're also doing a new tooled Warhawk, a P-40E in 148, a couple of dual kits, like there's one that had a ME-109, G6, and G14. There's another one with a couple of P-51s in it. So cool stuff from Edward. That's not photo etch. Airfix, I was looking at their B-24 Liberator, 172nd. Another one, new tool. Italeri has some guys I've seen talking about it, 132nd Mach-E C-200. And then last is I Love Kit, 116 scale M4A3E8. But this is the Thunderbolt 7 version. They also have with a full interior a Panzer 38T. And then I saw they have a 135th BMP variant that's coming out too. So Nuremberg had lots of stuff. I didn't cover all the cars and a lot of the other things, but that's some of the stuff that was showing on the reviews from Nuremberg just for us about a week ago.
Did you happen to leave any for Tooch?
Yes.
Oh, hell he did, yeah. I mean, did you mention that the Tamiya had the Grumman FM1 Wildcat / Mark V at the toy show?
The only thing I mentioned was the fact that it seems like the Leopards are gaining in popularity. So there's just a lot of those coming out. But no, nothing else from Tamiya that I didn't mention them.
And a lot of their motorsport cars, they have some out. But yeah, he did leave some meat on the bone, more like grizzled, because Mini Art announced in February they have their Tempo A400 Trifilata Tritch three-wheel. They continue the three-wheel vehicles. This one's a beer delivery truck for all those beer lovers.
Nice.
They have...
Hoppa!
The Omnibus crew and passengers, G518 US 1-ton, this is Frank Blanton country, cargo trailer with canvas, Ben Hur. Then they have the US fuel drop tanks and bombs, refugees, the teacher's family, which they just teased out that upcoming another kit that looked eerily familiar. They called it the Chandler's family. So I think they're doing like families escaping during wartime. Then they've got the G506 4x4 1.5-ton panel delivery truck. And then, of course, who would not want your cheese products to adorn your diary?
1/35th scale cheese wheels.
Damn, that sounds good.
Again, I know Rob, this hits a sore spot with him, but 3D modeling tends to be able to fit a lot of genres that sometimes were weak or soft in detail, especially 1/48th scale figures. Gloria Models has released the 48 scale F-35 pilot crew and ground crew. So keep an eye out in their lines. It's also under ET Models. They do a lot of stuff with 3D printed figures. And of course, I can't not get away with this because I'm not sure if we did it last time. But in 1/32nd scale, Copper State Models just released at the end of January, beginning of February, in development, but not yet finished, but it's really starting to look good. The World War I Henrot HD1 biplane, and also around the same time they teased out an armored truck, so it's got an open top but all surrounded with plates, British and Irish service, that is also in development. So look for those probably in the late spring, early summer when they do their pre-orders. So that's what I've got for now.
Nice. Thanks, Tooch. Rob Adams, have you got anything for us?
Barely. No, the one that I picked out was the Great Wall Hobbies upcoming release of the A10. I did recently pick up the Academy.
Oh, you got one?
Yeah, I got it here. Actually, I have two of them. And, you know, looking through the sprues of both of those, I haven't seen the actual sprues for the HDW kit, obviously. But it goes together quite a bit differently. It looks to be a little bit more detailed, but I don't think the build is going to be near as easy as the Academy kit.
Okay.
Because the Academy kit is all slide molded, and, you know, it's just, if you've built the Viper, well, you've built the Viper. It's yes. It's that level of engineering. Like, it's just okay. click, done. Comes with the masks, same thing, everything, nice. Right?
Okay.
And I think I picked it up for $48 or something.
Okay.
But the detail does look a lot nicer on the HDW, so... Might be worth it, but I think it's supposed to be going for about $80. So he picks your poison, right? That's a little expensive for a 48 scale.
Yeah.
Anything? Really?
But it depends on how addicted you are to A10 Warthogs.
Well, I mean, you know me. I got to have them all. So yeah. When it comes out, I will get it again. Same as I still got to get the Mang Apache to compare those two as well. See the big differences there. But that was the only kit that I really stood out to me.
That's good because... Frankie and Steve didn't leave much for you anyhow.
Yeah, that's true. We just went to the toy store or toy show.
All right, Dave, what do you got? You got found anything for us?
Yeah, I got something. It's a little stretching the definition. It's new to me. So years ago, for years and years, I saw this ugly, ugly aircraft, and I could never figure out what it was. I tried searching so many different ways, and last week I saw another picture of it, figured out it's the Westland Wendover. So imagine the Lysander, the observation utility plane high wing, take a meat cleaver right after the cockpit. Whack. There's nothing left of the tail. Now take the back end of a Lancaster bomber. So I started hunting around on ScaleMates. Nobody makes a kit, but there's an ancient mod, an ancient resin kit. So I did some poking around, and new to me, no part of this is new. The tester's base kit. It's ancient, but 109 Ace Model Works made an upgrade set with resin and vacuform canopies for the canopy and for the rear turret. And I'm just geeked to build this thing. The Westland Wendover. Great, ugly, ugly airplane.
Okay. All right. Hey, Rob, did you find anything in new kits in the new? Or did you just leave it to us?
I never do new kits in the new.
I know, but
I do upcoming shows.
Just trying to tie you in. That's all.
Got to make you feel like you're important.
All right, so we're going to be doing upcoming shows, but we're just going to focus on a couple because some people have asked to talk about some upcoming shows that are coming up. They're not necessarily in the next month or so, but let me just get these out of the way. So our good friend Ron Hogue had messaged me. Santucci knows Ron Hogue well. I know you guys do too from the Mount Mansfield, Vermont group. He wanted me to discuss the Can-Am Con 2024. And this is something that's further out, but I wanted to start talking about it on our shows and they asked me to do so. The Can-Am Con 2024 is going to be Saturday, April 20th, 2024. That's in April. So put this on the calendar. I will read these off a few more times in the next few podcasts, but we're going to start with this one. So again, it's April 20th, 2024. It's at the Williston National Guard Armory on 7846 Williston Road in Williston, Vermont, which is a suburb of Burlington. The show begins at 9 a.m. and will include traditional IPMS judging, a vendor area, and demos. The show hasn't gone on since 2019 because of COVID, and the show theme this year is the junkyard. It's abandoned, junk, derelict, rusted, decayed, or corroded subjects. And they also have a new Gundam category this year. And folks are welcome to display up the two models for the price for the admission, $1, which is not bad.
No.
All right, so you can check out the Mount Mansfield Scale Modelers Facebook group for more information, or you can contact Ron at badcheck, B-A-D-C-E-K, 75@hotmail.com. And that's from our good buddy Ron Hogue, who's a good friend of mine, and as well as Tooch and a couple of guys, so... We wanted to get that out there.
I just hope this episode drops before the time comes for that to show.
Fucking April, Justin. What are you trying
I'm
to say?
Kidding.
You're a douche.
The last episode we had, episode
I know,
was
dude.
11.
Listen, I tried.
I was listening. Man. I'm like, oh, all those shows.
I did. I try. You know what it is?
No. I'm not saying you're failing or anything. I just thought it was funny.
We're going to try to talk about shows that are further out in the distance right now.
Absolutely. Totally get it.
So this next upcoming show is also out in the distance. This is for a friend of mine. I talk to him often. His name is Jamie Anderson. He pops in the build rooms once in a while, so he wanted me to talk about Model Mania 2024. And this show takes place on May 4th, 2024 from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's located at the Stafford Center on 10505 Cash Road in Stafford, Texas. It's a Region 6 Southwest show, and it's sponsored by the IPMS Houston chapter. What's interesting about this is it takes place on May 4th, so we know what May 4th is. May the Force be with you. So one of the show themes is Star Wars, as well as Adversaries. And they're also going to be doing a Best in Show Mecha Award they're introducing this year, as well as they're implementing a gold, silver, and bronze and feedback sheets for the show. So this is pretty cool. Jamie, I wish I could make this show, but it's in Texas, so I don't know if I'm going to make it. But again, it's on May 4th, 2024, Model Mania. So hopefully anybody in that area can make it there. Then we're going to do one more, and that is the AtlantaCon 24 Region 3 Convention. This is on March 16th, 2024. It's from 9 to 5 p.m. It's a Region 3 Southeast show, and it's hosted by the RPMS Atlanta Scale Modelers. And it is located at the IAM Local 709 Union Hall. And it's at 1032 South Marietta Parkway in Marietta, Georgia. Okay, and that's on March 16th. So those upcoming shows, the first two are from Friends of Ours. All right, we're done with new kids in the news and upcoming shows. So we're going to do social media shout-outs. So we're going to go with Mr. Adams first. We never go with Mr. Adams for social media shout out. So here we go. Who's your shout out, Adams?
Justin actually pointed this out to me, and I was like, cool. Jeremy Elliott. So he talks about hanging out with Cobra Pla, who comes into our thing all the time.
Yeah, well, he's part of our group. Jeremy does, he comes in a lot now. Jeremy's a great guy, great builder, great guy all around. It's awesome.
So his post was Cobra Pla talked about doing a Gundam build painted like an aircraft or an armor piece. So here's my goof custom representing an A-10 from Idaho. And it's a super clean build, but, you know, he's got the freaking gigantic Gundam-style friggin' cannon on his arm and shit. And just a really nice, clean, tight paint job. It looks like a brand new thing ready to go out there and kick some ass. That's the one I'm going for because of my love of the A-10 and the good job that he did on it.
All right. It's awesome. He's a good guy, Jeremy. He does good stuff. Really good stuff. All right, Mr. Donati, who do you got?
A friend of the podcast, Kev Green, because we've all been watching him scratch build a 116 Mark IV female tank. The guy goes to the Lincoln Museum because that's where they built the first tanks back in World War I and measured himself a Mark IV female, has plotted it all out. He has printed himself 5,000 rivets, you know, and has started to make this from scratch. He picked up a laser cutter, so it's partially made out of wood for the foundation. His first go at it with the Plasticard was meh to him, but he's posting his diagrams, his CAD drawings, his renderings, and right now, I mean, it is shaping up to be an impressive-looking kit, and I'm just going to give him a shout-out for that because it's just amazing watching him work through this, his process, and I think this is going to be pretty cool-looking guy.
He's nuts, that guy.
What that guy do?
Mad Dog's an Englishman, my friends. Mad Dog an Englishman, right?
He does good stuff, but he's nuts.
Yeah, he is.
All right, Dr. Dave, what do you got?
Yeah, so I've been impressed with iBones models. I think Ian Bonner been working on Lanchester and Russian service. It goes along with my general theme. You know, I'm looking at, he's been very good about showing how he was able to get the patina, how he got the tones. So it doesn't just look like a solid chunk of green. Really enjoyed watching that build. And I enjoyed his also saying, this is how I did it.
I saw that. And he did a great job.
I think he just posted the finals. The in process over the past week or two have been really good.
Yeah, he did a really good job on that, Lanchester. I thought about Tooch when I saw that, because I know Tooch likes that vehicle. And speaking of that, Mr. Santucci.
Oh, mine's, again, is like Donati's, is a friend of the podcast Build Room Nights. It's Mike Spivey. Hopefully, Justin's mic is off so his wife doesn't hear this, because you know how she geeked out the other night. And you'll find out why she geeked out. It's his dinosaur bust, which just received a silver medal at the Atlanta Figure Show. So quite impressed. And I'm looking at it. I love the color. It just pops. It really catches. What I look for is what catches my eye. I think he did a fantastic job on it. It's just a bust on a nice single piece of plinth of wood. And it just looks solid. Love the colors. Love the detail. I've got to ask him, is that a glass eye he's stuck in there? Because it looks.
It is. He uses taxidermy eyes.
taxidermy eyes. Yeah, it looks great.
It does. It's a great piece. So shout out to Mike Spivey for that.
Do we know what kind of dinosaur that was? Just a head?
It's got the bill that goes back.
Okay.
It's a something-asaurus.
Something-asaurus rex.
I think a plat, but it's definitely a vegan.
All right, Justin, who's your social media shout out?
I actually found this guy. He's in a different group. He's not in our group directly. And actually, a bunch of our friends of the podcast have just been invited over to this group. It's a friend of mine, his group. It is the A to Z Scale Modelers group. And this guy, his name is Ira Dom. And he actually has been posting up a lot of stuff that he's been working on or has finished in recent history. The one I actually selected is Popcorn and Beer Wagon. It was done with the Monograph Beer Wagon kit, the Pie Wagon kit, and an AMT Studebaker. It's cool. It's one of those C-cab trucks, and it's got popcorn and beer up on the side. It's painted up like one of those popcorn machines that you see at the movie theaters or at a carnival. And it's really cool. And the other work that he's got that he's posted up in that group, his cars are amazing. So Ira Dom in the A to Z Scale Modelers group, you got my pick.
Good choice.
Nice.
So go check them out. If you didn't already get an invite from me, if you're on my friends list, you probably got an invite from me.
Actually, he was like, now that you're in here, start posting shit. He sent me a private message one day.
Oh, did he?
My social media shout out goes to a former Long Islander. He doesn't live here anymore. I never met him in person, but I do talk to him on Facebook. He's a great builder. He is builds a lot like me in a lot of ways. He's fucking really, really good. His name is Frank Damon. I don't know if you guys know Frank. He just got a gold in Atlanta for his little KV1 conversion, Wilder conversion with that 8K interactive, you know, conversion that makes your SU or your JSU or your KV, like that what if turret. He did a fucking bang out job. If you guys seen his KV that he did or whatever you would call it with that turret, he did an amazing job on this model. I'm sure if anybody's seen it. Frank does awesome work. He was well-deserving of this gold medal down there. I thought he would probably win something a little better for that piece, but I think he deserved that. Hopefully I'll see him at the Nationals. But kudos to you, Frank. You did a great job. It's very inspiring on the build that you did, the paint job. The weathering is second to none. Excellent work. Very inspiring. And my build, if I can do half the paint job that you did, I'd be happy. All right, so that's it for social media shout out. So is there anything else, any other business that we need to cover before we sign off? We're going on about 3 hours here. So we're going to end it up. We thank Dr. Dave for joining us to talk about his little insight into the hobby, especially his time going to AMPS shows as well as IPMS. Your journey in the hobby so far has been great, Dave. You're doing a great job. We're thankful for you to be part of the group, and you're always a welcomed addition, part of the family, and we have a good time. I will say that we're also happy that you made it on the show before Brad. I'm not sure if we're going to have Brad on, but we might. I tell him we're going to have him on all the time. So I string him along, and he keeps asking when he's coming on. And I say next week, next week, next week, before we hit the 52nd week, and I'll tell him next week. But we'll have him on eventually, at one point, in a year or two, maybe in three. Depends.
Perhaps.
But yes, no, but Dave, we're glad you're here, and we had a really good time. Hopefully you had a good time. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time. Good hanging out. Oh, mute my mic.
Yeah, this guy's mic has been effed up all night, but what are you going to do? At least Donati got his new mic, and he sounds fantastic. All right, so on that note, we're going to sign off. So this was a great episode. Fun, again. I'm not sure if there's a lot of outtakes in there, but we'll see. So again, we're going to sign off. So again, for the Modeling Insanity Podcast, I'm Rob Riv. I'm with my co-host, Mr. Justin Ryan.
Have a wonderful evening, folks. We'll see you next time.
Mr. Steve Santucci.
Goodbye and enjoy the hobby.
Mr. Frank Donati.
Thanks for spending your time with us.
And Mr. Rob Adams.
Model on.
And our special guest, Dr. Dave Morris.
Odoetch is your friend.
Oh, man. All right, guys. Thank you. Have a good one. See you on the next time. And I'm a little disappointed because you're not either intoxicated or stoned this episode. You've been well behaved in a lot of ways. Well, and you've been coherent. I like when you start, like, I like the progression of the podcast where you go from like coherent to gradually slipping into the abyss. And you can hear it in your voice as you realize you start becoming like, and then you start to forget where you are. You don't know what time it is. You forget your name. You don't know what's for dinner. Where am I? And then there you go. You're done. I missed that today. You're too coherent.
Well, it's because we're recording earlier in the day. So, I mean.
Yeah, which is one of the downfalls.
I am on my fourth drink. So, I mean, if that's anything.
Yeah, but like four drinks for you is like fucking breathing for most people.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't do anything.
Doesn't do anything. No. It's like a necessity. All right.
Hey, so, Mark, when you're all done disparaging Adams, you want to tell us what your kid of the week is?
Listen, Dave, you are, and we know we love you. You're a big part of our group. You know what? I'll save this in a podcast. You know what? I'll say it now first, but I'll say it in a podcast. You are the most respectable guy that we have in the group right now. So we've got to make you look good. Because you can't be brought down to our level. Because you're definitely like, you know, the Four Season type restaurant, and we're like Chili's. So we need you to look good.
She's good. She's just doing laundry and watching The Curse of Oak Island. So
that is what I want to hear. Tell Patty, hey, I said, thank you for doing what she's supposed to be doing. The laundry. Go clean the toilet.
Thank you for doing what you're supposed to be doing. The laundry and stuff.
Welcome to the 50s.
Oh shit! Here she comes. Thanks, Rob.
I changed the toner.
She changed inks, and now she's got blue
you
fingers.
You are definitely earning your place in the house.
I'm not saying that.
That's why you don't need a maid. You got your wife.
She just screamed, I did not jerk off a Smurf.
Oh, shit. All right. So we're going to get started. I might have to go to bathroom in my life.
Number one or number two?
It might be number two, because I didn't
just go to school. Just want to know how much time we have.
Not a lot.
I'll take a picture of it. They've been fantastic lately, Dr. Dave. All right, we're getting started. But in all seriousness, too, you mentioned the Kitty Hawk FT-17s?
Flyhawks, yeah.
Flyhawks. Yeah. Who got you those?
I did.
No, your friend Rob got them for you from B&A.
Oh, yes. You asked one day, hey, do you want anything? And you bought one set. I bought the other set.
I bought you a set, you ungrateful bastard. You didn't even remember that. That's how much you think of me. Oh, see, people, listeners, you see, this is what I'm talking about.
What did you get for Christmas, Rob? What did you get for Christmas? Original artwork of your Stug.
Right. I'm still five up on you. At least six.
I see how this friendship works.
But I just want to let the listeners know that you're enjoying a very, very important part of the hobby. You wanted those kits. And I got it for you. I procured those. Is that the word procure? Procure?
The grand facilitator.
I facilitated those fucking models for you, young grateful bastard.
I like that you don't know what you're going to get thing. You know, it'll teach you a thing or two about what you do. Yeah, exactly.
That was sort of like Justin's dating habits back in the day before he was married. You get in a room with some chick, you don't know what you're going to get.
No.
Every box is different.
Oh, shit.
My thing is, hold on one second, guys. Deb, can you shut that door?
Why, there was noise?
Yeah, my wife's fucking tap dancing upstairs.
Dude, she's cleaning the house. Be lucky.
That's a keeper.
You never muted.
Listen, if she's not tap dancing naked, I don't care. People are like, how do you do those 3D? They're on that. Oh, fuck.
Yes, right,
how do you do the 3D printing? Just rip that out of my...
I'm glad
I edit this shit.
We're glad you edited this shit.
Oh, that's going to be edited. Because I got 3D printed on my mind because I got fucking Adam staring at me. See, I don't know if that's really... I like it's a little bit softer than harder in a lot of... Oh, shit.
Soft.
Fuck. Hello. Soft. Oh, no. I know I'm never going to get the end of that one. Oh,
they got God. Bills for that, Rob.
I like it hard.
I'll let you use mine when you come over.
Okay. We'll play with some solder.
I just need to know, do you like it hard or soft like Riv?
like a noodle.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but you know what? We're still showing that. What are we about? We're still about the hobby.
Absolutely.
We're still about modeling, right? So
not just sumo buttholes.
Yes.
Oh, hold on, guys. I'm getting a phone call. Hold on. Everybody just stop the convo really quick.
Talk about I got to take a pee-pee.
While you leave, we're going to talk about you. And you're going to have great outtakes that you won't use because it's about you.
Well, we could talk about all sorts of different things, like how sharing a hotel room with Rob can be a hazmat call.
Better have a doctor on call.
You better have a doctor on call.
It's amazing what a half a colon can produce.
Yeah. Well, it's because of the distance, right? There's no filtration system to remove the toxins. It just comes right out as raw sewage. Like you're at source.
Right. Yeah. We're pretty damn close to it.
Poor roommates. Poor wife.
Yeah.
No wonder she texts you.
Yeah. Help me. I think like my wife stays in another room. Sleeps on the couch, drinks wine. If you were married to Rob, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would drink a lot of wine if I was married to Rob. I'd be smoking weed with Adams all the time, too.
Yeah.
What happened?
Fuck.
Oh, your wife? Tell her to get in the kitchen, for Christ's sake, and cook something instead of complaining. There's got to be a consequence to her opening her mouth when she's not supposed to talk. What do you think this is? Tell her to get in there, cook something good for dinner. I don't want to hear her bitching and moaning back there again, pacing back there like an expected father over there. She's more pacing. It's driving me crazy, tell your wife. I got to make sure I look at her to call my eye, because if my wife hears me talking like that, she's going to be running down the stairs with a stick.
A bat, probably.
And my wife just texted me, what do you want for dinner? What time for dinner? She's trained well. All right, so my social media outtake. Oh, fucking outtake. I keep saying outtake for it. Something's wrong with me.
Wait. Put your phone down. You're not focused.
Wait. I got his thing.
You're realizing now there's something wrong with you. If you stop looking at porn on your phone, you'd be
focused. I'm looking at my shout out, man.
Look at the size of the dick on that picture you got there.
Hello.
We'll call it a Spiveysaurus.
Not a Spiveysaurus. I call it a Rathenbergosaurus. Oh,
yeah. Fuck that guy, too.
Fuck that Jesus guy. I'm with Christ. You, Rob. Jesus.
What is going on here?
Just having fun. Jesus Christ, leave me alone.